This week's episode of This Is Only a Test is made possible by MailChimp. MailChimp is an easy-to-use marketing platform with a name that might make it sound like they only do email. But they do just about everything to help businesses grow, like ads, postcards, landing pages, audience management tools, automations, reports, and more. You could say MailChimp grew so much they outgrew their name, and their marketing tools can help you do the same. Go to MailChimp.com to sign up for free and see how MailChimp can help grow your business. MailChimp, they do more than email. For Thursday. Actually, someone should say, hey, start the show. It's been a while since I've done this.
Hey, let's start the show.
For Thursday, November 22nd. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone, 2018. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com.
Something's wrong. This isn't the right song. 2 weeks in a row. You're going to hear from my manager again. It's in my fucking writer.
I didn't get the right.
I don't ask for the brown M&Ms.
All right. Whew. It's been a hot minute. I'm Norm. I'm just going to introduce everyone. If you're listening to the audio, not watching the video, you may have heard the voices already. We have two original This Is Only a Test co-hosts on the show. This is an OG cast.
Is he original?
Yeah.
He came in like episode 5.
If you recall, Will, of course, is on.
You wouldn't know it from the theme song.
Sans dubstep. I listened to that episode that you did with Jeremy and Kishore, and it's okay.
I'm frankly insulted. I expected better of you, Norm.
I like that you guys thought, that was the theme the whole time. The dubstep theme. It wasn't special for you.
No, I knew that was special
for
me.
Okay, you knew it was special for you.
But then the other theme that Jeremy played, this Mad New Madness.
Yeah.
That's not the theme. That's the new theme.
We like this theme.
It's a good theme.
And
I like that theme.
We have Gary.
Hey, Gary. Hi.
Welcome back. You were on like 2 weeks ago, too.
I was on a few weeks ago, yeah, with Jeremy.
You know, that was the week.
I was here, too, man.
You both were here. That was the week of the Apple event, and I listened to that podcast in the hospital.
Yeah.
And
it's good use of your time.
Labor lasts a long time. And
hey, honey, you're in excessive pain. Why don't we listen to this great episode of This Is Only a Test?
To listen to that podcast and listen to you guys talk about the Apple news.
Oh, it was painful, wasn't it?
It was so painful.
It was so bad.
You guys were Googling what was different about the MacBooks and
I think I mentioned at one point this is the least informed podcast I've ever even heard of, let alone been on.
You might have
really saying something.
You recorded, I think, the day after the event. So people were still digesting the news. And to be fair, the event was a little bit confusing because there was... Oh, there goes some updates.
Speaking of things that are confusing,
there were a lot of like weird product announcements from
I was very
MacBook
confused.
Air that was cheaper than the MacBook,
yeah,
and where that lines up and how they're different.
But still too expensive for what it is, it seems.
Right. Yeah. So I think it was a sign of a good podcast. That was my point, because all I wanted to do while listening to it was engage. I wanted to chime in.
You were screaming at the radio.
I was screaming at the radio.
It correctly replicated the confusion that consumers are feeling.
That's right.
Here's the interesting thing about this year's Apple lineup. This is, I think, the first time in probably a decade since the iPhone 3G came out that I didn't give Apple any money this year. Like, I haven't bought any Apple hardware. I didn't buy a new phone. Probably not going to buy an iPad. Maybe next year, but not right now. No new laptop. No watch. No. I bought AirPods last year. I'm good there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're getting none of my money this year.
I was on that same train until I bought the new iPad Pro. And that was maybe a moment of weakness, because I was in the hospital and I was looking at the fancy new stuff. And again, there's a lot of nothing to do.
Wait, you got that and then had it delivered to the hospital?
No, I went home to pick it up. Okay. I needed to get some fresh air.
Was this during labor?
No, it was right after.
Okay.
Right after the baby was born.
It's normal.
Maybe it was a moment of weakness, but it was nice and shiny. And my parents both got iPad Pros as well. My mom's on, actually. Her iPad she's on? She's on an iPad, the first Retina one, an iPad 3.
Oh, that's what Gina has. And it's unusable now.
Unusable.
So that would actually be a good upgrade.
That was a huge upgrade. But the Pro isn't for normal people.
No.
The Pro, I mean,
it's for pros.
It's for pros.
Is your mom a pro? She's probably not listening, so you could be honest.
She's a professional.
Okay.
But not in the computing
sense. She's a pro computer user.
No, she's not.
Well, then the iPad Pro is probably perfect for her.
The screen's nice. It's a really nice big screen.
The same like gamut and stuff as the iPhone X, right?
Yes, it has the True Tone, and it has 120 hertz, which no other device has. Yeah, it has
super buttery smooth scrolling.
Yeah, I think that one, they really enjoy that. And, you know, the way that my parents use computers and iPads is they leave, like, all their tabs open.
Yeah.
You open Safari on their computers or their tablets, and it's like every tab they've ever opened is there. And so the memory management is better on that device.
Do you know the close all tabs trick? I just found this out the other day, and it's fucking magic. If you press and hold, press and hold the tab button in Safari, then it says close this tab, close all 23 tabs, new
you
private
have
tab, or new tabs.
23 tabs open right now.
That's it. I never get to keep it clean.
Well, on tablets, on mobile devices,
who uses the
versus on desktop, tabs are done differently because on your mobile device, the tabs aren't actually using memory in real time. It's just cache. It's like a bookmark.
Yeah, it's
almost
a bookmark.
And so people use them like bookmarks on your desktop. In Chrome, if you have like 30 tabs open, that's why Chrome sucks. Then your computer's running in a crawl.
They do better with that now. Like they unload stuff that's on closed tabs and hasn't been used in a while. But it's still, each one is a process. That was a selling point when they launched Chrome. They were like, look, if one tab crashes, it's not going to crash your whole browser. This is going to be great 32 gigs of memory later.
Yeah. I miss being on the podcast, guys. I miss talking tech and talking things.
Look, you don't have a voice. Without a podcast, if you don't have a podcast, you're nobody these days. That's how it works.
Wow.
Yeah,
it was a glimpse on the other side. How did it feel when both of you guys stopped doing this podcast?
Great.
I was fine.
I didn't have to start. I could stop reading tech news. It was terrific.
I have my kind of funny gig now, so that keeps me in the public sphere.
Yeah. Right.
You want to talk about uninformed podcasts, you should listen to me.
Oh, it's great.
On Kind of Funny sometimes, because I don't know anything. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
And you're not even kind of funny. You're like moderately funny at best.
Not even kinda, yeah.
Yeah.
And I make a point of not. I don't study or learn about anything that's happening in the news.
Man, they must.
And
love
then
you.
I go co-present a news show.
Yeah.
Do they set you up when you go in front of the teleprompter? They like give you a handout.
Gary
like here are your here are your 10 topics to talk about this week. And an intern typed up 3-second briefs or 3-sentence briefs.
Yeah,
I
show up. Uh-huh. I'm given a piece of paper that has the day's news on it.
Right.
And then 5 minutes later, I'm sitting down reading the news.
Critical analysis.
Give you any like zingers? They give you any like hits that you can, like little bon mots you can drop in there to be
no,
funny?
No, I come up with all those myself.
You got to write that yourself, huh? Wow. That explains a lot.
You know,
they have a really neat screen behind their desk.
They have a very nice
setup
over there.
Oh. It's like a jumbotron.
I'd love to come by. Get some mom waters.
Yeah, they still have quite a lot of that.
Hey, Will, we talked about when Gary, do you remember your first time being a regular on this podcast was with an Apple product? It was with the iPhone 4.
It was with
the iPhone 4 because you got, it was when Apple was accidentally shipped them out early.
Yeah.
We're talking about like
didn't that happen
seven,
during an Octobercast?
Yeah, no, that was, 4 was during Octobercast.
No.
The first thing we had, iPad was the first thing we had. Right, iPhone would have been in that fall.
Right. iPad was the first thing we had, but Gary, you did get the iPhone 4 early, and we had you come in because you were the only one we knew who had the iPhone
that was
with
during Octobercast.
A Retina display.
And then ours came during the show.
Oh, I barely remember this.
Well, of course. You have a kid.
Yeah, this was back in the distant
past. You have a kid now.
You've lost 15% of your brain capacity. You're allowed to lose all your memory.
And that's my point. I felt it day by day. Over the 8 years of doing this podcast, all three of us have now had children.
Yeah.
And that's Beer and Lee, because our top story this week is
congratulations,
Norm's a dad.
I thought it was going to be at Thanksgiving.
Oh well, and happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
So this podcast is going out on Thanksgiving Day. Is
people
that right?
should be getting on Thanksgiving, and back when
American Thanksgiving.
When's Canadian Thanksgiving?
Sometime else.
Some other time,
like June,
some ridiculous.
I feel
time.
Like it's September or October. Yeah. I remember telling everybody happy Thanksgiving maybe 3 weeks ago, a month ago. I don't know.
Gary, you had your kid first.
Yes, that's true.
6 months before.
I was the first one.
Yeah.
Of this group.
I got to go back and listen to podcasts because I'm really curious.
He was already not showing up for this podcast by then.
When your kid
came
out.
Just go back to like July 2012.
All right.
Yeah.
And then about January, February 2013.
January 2013, yeah.
Was when you had your kid.
Yeah.
Or your wife had your kid.
My wife
but
had
you
our,
together
our kid.
Had a kid.
So, I mean, if you're looking for pointers or advice, my advice is don't. Do that.
Well, it's
you're not
going to
get anything of any value from either of us.
People still speak really fondly of the dadcast. I get a lot of emails from people saying, "Hey, will you bring a bunch of dads back?"
I want this. This let's bring them back.
This is like an informal Bunch of Dads right now.
Here's what I've been thinking about Bunch of Dads.
Yeah.
I think we should bring it back as a Q&A show with like two people, because the panel was too many people to get together. Like getting four or five busy people together,
right,
way too hard.
And I think you talked about it as having one person there potentially not being a dad or an impending dad. And then scaring them with all the
It's nice
information
to have a new dad. You want to have a new, you want to have a medium, you want to have an old.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what we've got.
Yeah.
Well, no, we're both the same, essentially.
Are you both mediums or both old?
I feel so old, though.
I mean, you look old. It's been rough.
It does. You're going to, you will now enter into dad stroke presidential years.
Yeah.
Like 5 or 6 years from now. I think you are so perfectly set up for the gray hair to come in.
I'm fully expecting gray hair.
The white in the chin of my beard.
It gets plucked out.
Yeah. You can only do that for so long.
It's going to become unpluckable.
Oh, no. Yeah. Don't tell me that.
You won't be able to pluck all of it.
Or you get big bald spots.
Your youthful good looks are going to fade away.
But the 5 years since, 5 and 6 years since you guys had your kids, I don't think I fully appreciated.
No, it fucks you up, man.
What it was like, because I would hear your stories, and I would think intellectually, Will looks extra tired this morning, or Will's forgetting like 10-15% of his brain.
Will is really stupid all of a sudden now. Yeah,
and
that's
I was
the
like,
thing.
Oh, is this what happens with age?
Parenthood.
And I didn't get it until, and I've had it for 2 weeks now.
We've said this to you for years.
Yeah,
parenthood.
He doesn't listen.
And particularly kind of the anxiety and the stress and the exhaustion that comes with it is like the Matrix. No one can be told what it is. You have to see it for yourself.
It's like Brendan Fraser learning baseball in Blast from the Past.
So there was a moment when our kid was maybe 3 months old when Gina looked at me and she was like, we're never going to catch up on sleep again, are we? Because, like, you know, when you don't have a kid, you think, oh, man, I can totally work without sleep for a long time. I can sleep for I'm going to stay up and play Red Dead 2 until 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to get up. I'm going to roll into work. I'm going to be a zombie all day. And I'm going to go to bed at 6 o'clock tomorrow night and I'll be good.
You can do that when you're a young man.
You can never do that when you have a kid because the kid gets up at whenever the fucking kid gets up.
This is the thing that I was not prepared for.
No, I told you it was going to
happen. I could do the first like 3 nights, no problem.
Yep.
With like 2 or 3 hours of sleep. And it just felt like a late night.
And then you leave the hospital.
And then there was that moment, I think over maybe this past weekend when Dan and I looked at each other and it's like, yeah, we got this. But then you realize you don't get the catch-up day.
Well, I mean, you can, but the other one is going to take the hit for it. Like, you guys have to trade off. Like, and she's bone because she's responsible for food right now.
It's death thus, by a thousand cuts.
Yeah, she can't sleep. So it's much worse for your wife.
Because it's like, a slow burn. Like, yeah. It just adds on and builds up.
Do you remember the first trip we took after my daughter was born when we got to Houston with Dave Chang and Tracy Desjardins?
Yep.
And we got there. And you and Joey were like, hey, let's go out and we're going to go out and get some beers. And I was like, see you guys later. I'm going to sleep at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
I remember that.
Which was really 2 o'clock our time.
Boy, I'm really looking forward to going on trips.
Yeah, you need to find a book a trip fast, man.
Don't tell my wife.
Don't listen. Danica, if you're listening to this, I'm so sorry.
So
it's hard.
I'll give a little bit of a primer on our birth story. I guess that's what people call it, right? What happened.
Yeah, it's the thing part everybody loves to hear about.
Well, it's what I lived through.
No, I know. It's an important part of the thing, but yeah.
So
the tested audience wants to hear this, Norm.
Yeah.
And you guys know some of this.
You.
Did you build a scoop to catch?
No. Well, okay. The baby was due October 31st.
Halloween.
We really wanted a Halloween baby.
Yeah.
And so...
That would be cool because years down the road, when you go out trick-or-treating, it's also the birthday.
Exactly. Yeah. And actually, my housemate, his birthday is on Halloween.
How's
so
that
we had
out
some
for him?
Firsthand experience, and he's enjoyed it.
Okay.
We know some people who, like, they say, yeah, it sucks because you got to share a birthday with other people. But then you're forced to dress up for your birthday, and we really like the idea. And if you're watching that Sabrina show on Netflix, her birthday's on Halloween.
So, is that the girl from Mad Max?
Mad Men. It is.
The daughter.
From Mad Max. From Mad Men.
Sally Draper.
Sally Draper, yeah. She was awesome.
And so we were all planning for a Halloween birthday. That was our 40 weeks. I started taking time off about like half a week before that.
It was a bold choice, by the way.
Well, I wanted to be prepared.
Yeah.
You must have known, though. I mean, I know that you had a pretty good expectation that it was going to be on that day. But at the same time, it's very rare that the baby comes on the actual day it's expected.
I think they said 5%.
5%
babies arrive on their day. And they can track, right? They track the size of the belly. They track, you know, all sorts of medical things that the OBs do. And our baby was actually tracking early. So we were freaked out like a week and a half before. We were like,
no October
babies. Hold it till Halloween. And so we were doing things to try to be active. I went to see a ton of movies, maxed out our AMC pass, watched so many movies that week leading up to Halloween. And then as we crept closer to Halloween, nothing was happening. Oh. There were no signs of labor, no water breaking. And we had a doctor's appointment that Monday before Halloween. Halloween was on a Wednesday. And the doctor told us, you're not going to get Halloween, you know. And so can we discuss? Could we induce?
This is like that Apollo 13 moment. Like the doctor's like, "Well, Norm, Danica, we have a problem.
Oh, they
we lost the moon. We've lost the moon."
Poured a thing on the stuff on the table and say, "How do you fit a baby through here, making this shape?" So we had to resign ourselves to the fact that, you know, we would probably have to wait for after Halloween. And that week, waiting from 40 weeks to 41 weeks was probably the toughest part. Because the uncertainty of, like, baby could come any minute.
Well, and Danica's horrifically uncomfortable.
So uncomfortable. Yeah. I can't even imagine what it's like to have that extra, the weight in front of you being unbalanced, being stressed out. And every night we'd go to bed and, like, worry that we'd have to wake up at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And water would break or something, we'd go to the hospital. Because
did you make her sleep on a garbage bag or anything?
No.
Okay, that's nice.
But we were worried that, you know, we'd be caught off guard.
Yeah.
Essentially. Like, we were on edge for a whole week. It's a different kind of edging. And
it's pretty extreme.
It got to the next week. We had another doctor's appointment. And at that point, it was, you know, November 4th. And we're like, no, we want this baby now. We don't want to wait any longer. So we induced, and the baby came out November 6th.
It was a 30-hour labor-ish?
So when you induce...
Yeah, we did this.
They give you medication, like oral medication, and then something through an IV.
Pitocin.
That just... which, you know, Pitocin is just the
it's the hormone that induces...
It's the brand name for oxytocin.
Oh.
And your bodies can naturally generate oxytocin with hugs and stuff.
So you didn't hug your wife enough is why you...
Oh, no, we were saying when we thought the baby was coming out... Early, we're like, oh, we can't hug. We can't, no oxytocin.
Oh, yeah. Don't withhold
oxytocin.
Cute. No.
Or else the baby would come early. So they give you Pitocin. They give you some other oral medication. And that's supposed to induce labor. But it adds like 12 hours to the whole process. And so even if we had like induced on October 30th, it could have been a November 1st baby. Like there's no guarantee. And sometimes it doesn't even work. Sometimes you just have to go home and wait it out because the baby's ready when
the
baby's ready.
But what you discover after the fact when the baby is born is that you don't really care what day it was. You're just happy to have the baby.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
10 fingers and 10 toes, man.
And so we went through the whole process, got the medication, was in the hospital for like over a day, and we ended up having a C-section. Mm-hmm. And that happened because I think I was texting with you guys, keeping you guys up to date with what was going on. And that happened very quickly. It went from, you know, labor is going to start and now the pushing will begin to doctor saying, we should have a C-section. And then I think I texted you guys, C-section's happening. And like 15 minutes later,
baby
was born. And that was insane.
Well, it's
once they actually get into the business of doing a C-section, there's no messing around.
No, like, it just gets done. It's in the high gear. And they take you to the operating room. You put on the scrubs. You're not supposed to touch anything. There's an anesthesiologist. Everyone's like, Danica and I are freaking out, of course.
And there's a bunch of people in there.
Bunch of people, nurses in there. And baby comes out. Baby gets handed over to like a team of three nurses. And they take it to
and
a
it's
station.
Like, you know what it's like? It's like a pit crew.
It is. I have that video. I have the video of the nurses basically flipping the baby around and,
they're
and
super
wiping
fast.
Them
like,
up.
Do you hear the cry?
Oh, okay, yeah. Baby's crying the entire time.
The cry was the best sound I'd ever heard because the cry took longer than I felt like it should take. And we were a natural vaginal birth.
Right.
But it was probably 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But it was the longest 30 seconds of my life. Right.
What were you guys thinking when you first saw your baby?
Well,
I'm really curious.
So for me, honestly, the thing I was thinking... we were induced because Gina had blood pressure issues and they were worried about it. So they induced her and we went in at like same time you did it, like 10 o'clock the night before she was born. And like they started the oral medicine, they started the Pitocin drip about 2 o'clock in the morning. And then the baby was there at like 10 o'clock. And all I was thinking was, holy shit, there's only one nurse and the doctor in here. Because like that's the doctor barely made it. We you know, like he hauled ass across town to get there in time. And he came in and looked and was like, oh, I got to put my clothes on. And he just pulled a gown on right over top of what he was wearing and like jumped right in. And the whole time I was thinking it was us and Roxanne, the delivery nurse, who like she scooped up. Like the doctor handed me the baby. I handed the baby to Gina. And then like 10 seconds later, she grabbed the baby. I cut the cord. They went over and did the scrub and the weighing and all that. I mean, it was more than 10 seconds, but it seemed really fast. All I was thinking was, holy shit, I can't believe there's only two people in here that know what they're doing.
That's yeah. The whole system. Gary, how about you?
How did I feel?
Yeah, the moment you saw your baby.
You guys had been at it for a really long time.
It was a 52. I always hesitate to say we because I mean I was there as well, but Leah did 99.9% of the work. I was just an observer. 52 hours of labor and then a C-section, so it was rough. And you know the epidural didn't take.
Oh,
so like Leah was in a lot of discomfort, you know, and I use that term very mildly for a lot of it. And it was rough. Like the baby's head was like so close to coming out. And it just, we had a similar situation to you that every time it was close, the baby's heart rate would drop.
That
and they would say, oh, we don't like that. And I don't like that either. And I actually learned to kind of read the heart rate monitor. I could tell when it was normal and when something was not quite right. And for a long time I was very nervous about that. And then they like around midnight or around 2 a.m. on I guess what would have been now the third day because we're 52 hours in, they said, "Well, we can try a couple of things. We could try forceps delivery. You know, where they literally kind of grab the baby's head with a
clamps.
Pair of tongs,
yeah,
and yank it out.
Yeah.
So, but we don't like to do that. You can go for a scheduled." Like a C-section now,
right?
And you can all go in, and Dad can be in there as well, or you can try pushing again. But if you try pushing again and it doesn't go great, we have to rush you into a C-section, and then Dad can't come in. So we decided that we would just do the C-section.
The
and it wasn't, one. You know, it's yeah. not wasn't anyone's first choice.
It's yeah. not it, like it was you know, a 3 hours
really,
away.
I mean, some people do decide to have a C-section and schedule it, but that wasn't what we had planned. I mean, we were a home birth. We planned to be a home birth and ended up, you know, in the most surgical, from the least hospital type situation to the most hospital type situation, from one to the other. And to answer your question, it's funny because when Will said he cut the cord, my first thought was, did I cut? I think I did.
You said you did.
I think, yeah. Okay. Yeah. If I said I did, then I did.
It's but chewy. It seemed chewy.
The point being that my memory of it is very hazy. Because you know what I analogize it to? There's a great book called Into Thin Air written by a guy called John Krakauer about people who climb Everest. And it was about people that died climbing Everest. And he actually did get to the summit and climbed it. And people say to him, you know, when he says he climbed Everest, oh, it must be so amazing. Like the feeling of standing atop Everest must be like the most amazing feeling of triumph in the world. And he's like, no, it's really not. Because you're so exhausted and you're so oxygen deprived because there's no oxygen up there. And you also have to worry about getting back down.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of people die on the way back down. You're only there for a few moments. You don't have long to kind of go, hooray, we did it. And you're so exhausted anyway that you don't really get a moment of triumph. You're just like, ugh.
You don't get up there and crack a cold one.
And that's kind of like what the moment was for me. I was just so, because I'm an anxious person, I'm a worrier.
Like, especially after 52 hours.
After 52 hours, no sleep, everyone's exhausted. When the baby finally came out, I remember it was really just a feeling of relief more than anything else. Like, the baby's out. Yeah. Like, thank God. Yeah. Like, because it did not want to come out.
I mean, anytime you go to an operating room.
And healthy.
Like, all I remember in the operating room from before the baby came out was peeking over the curtain. And I didn't want to look at the incision. But all I remember seeing is a big, like, trays of knives, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
Knives and scissors. Well, big trays of, like, filled with dozens of those. I'm like, this is serious.
I remember them telling, when you go into the room, you know, because you have to scrub up just like a real doctor.
Yeah.
And they put the
cap and gown.
The cap and gown on you.
It's like you're graduating.
The scrubs.
Yeah.
They put the scrubs on you. And they say, once you're in there, just don't touch anything that's blue. Because anything that's blue has been sterilized and you can't touch it. And you go in there and everything's blue.
And they I got yelled at immediately. Because I forgot it immediately. Because, like, where am I supposed to be? Where am I supposed to be?
Yeah.
And you know, when we were preparing for the natural birth as well, you know, I brought my DSLR. I brought, like, a 3D camera, 360 camera. I was like, I had the room all teched
up. Everybody wants that, a 360 camera.
And then once the C-section decision was happened, like, all your plans go out the window. Then you're just the mercy of let the nurses tell me exactly where to be, where to stand. Yeah. And thank goodness I had my phone in my pocket underneath the scrub so I could take some pictures of the baby and some video as the baby was coming out. Because I can't even imagine from, like, Danica's perspective, she can't see a thing.
No, because there's a shield
she's
up.
Well, and she's doped up,
she's
too.
She's doped up, just, like, in pain, freaking out.
And it's not like she would have to sit up and lean forward.
Yeah,
not
she can't.
Her muscles are not doing that.
She's being literally cut open.
Like, heavily anesthetized.
She says... Like a magician's assistant being cut in half, except for real.
Yeah, that's what it's like,
right? And I can't even imagine. But like, all your plans go out the window, and you're just trusting the doctors. What I also found out is that like the doctors and the nurses in the hospital, they don't always agree with each other. And the nurses have their own way of doing things, and the doctors they throw constant shade at each other. Like when we were waiting into labor, and I was looking at the heartbeat monitor. That thing is amazing. We saved the papers. Because there are two lines. Like there's one for the contractions and one for the baby's heart rate. And this is like the only tangible thing you have of that experience, right? Like your baby, you could feel the
kicks.
You have
the baby.
Yeah, you have the baby.
I mean, but the baby's
from
nice.
The labor
The paper's
experience.
Okay, though.
The paper's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But the baby goes from this like bulge in the uterus, the belly, to kicks. It's kind of still like a distance thing. But you have like when you see the heartbeat, you have this real, this timeline of labor. Of what it's like.
Well, you guys bought that ultrasound thing that lets you hear the heartbeat. The
heartbeat we bought monitor. One of those home ultrasound things.
And we borrowed it for a little bit toward the end there.
Yeah.
And it was like it was one of those things that just like at the end of the day you put it on and you listen and you're like, oh man, this sounds good.
It's the trippiest thing for me even now, almost 2 weeks later, looking at the baby, looking at him and saying, 2 weeks ago he was on the other side of this person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he was inside her.
Yeah.
And
like an alien.
And he was almost as fully developed and could hear many of the things he's hearing now.
He could have come out for the last month and a half and been okay.
Yep.
I remember I got in trouble for peeking over that curtain too many times. The doctor asked me to sit down because I was so fast. I remember being, on the one hand, because I don't like viscera and gore and stuff like that. I'm quite squeamish. I have a low tolerance for that. But something about it being my wife and my baby... There's a switch that flips and you just kind of get on with it, like you just deal with it.
Yeah.
And well, and you were also. So I was like right up close to all the blood and guts and gore, and there was kind of two halves of me. There was the half of me that was anxious, and worried and nervous and, you know, empathizing with Leah and everything she was going through, but mostly just anxious and nervous and like I really hope this works out okay, because until the baby's out and healthy you just don't know. But then there was another part of me that was just kind of intellectually fascinated by it all, and it kind of the two parts of me kind of bifurcated, and I remember thinking, this is amazing, like that we can do these things, like you know, just things. And again, for these doctors and nurses, they're doing several of these a day. This is completely routine, but for you this is a once in a lifetime experience.
That was the other thing that was tough to reconcile, because after spending 4 days at the hospital and you have like a rotation of nurses, and for you it's the most important moment of our lives, right? And everything the nurse says we're hanging on by a thread.
Never paid attention to a human being more.
And the day we're checked out, they didn't even say goodbye. It's it.
No, because they're worried about they've got the next one coming.
They see like five new babies every day.
More than
right?
That,
they just we're just another satisfied
another
customer.
Notch in the
baby
belt.
Number 716-54328.
The thing that so if you're about to have a kid and you're listening to this, fast forward like 2 minutes because I'm gonna say stuff that's gonna horrify you. There were two things that I realized when we were driving like to the induced birth. I told you this the other day, but as I was driving, my wife's sitting next to me. Everything's fine. Like her blood pressure's a little bit up, but it wasn't dangerous up. Just enough that they didn't want to keep the baby anymore. I was thinking, oh, this is one of the, like, as a modern human that's not faced with the threat of predators or you know, anything. Like, this is one of
you,
the only...
When you say predators, do you mean, like, animals
tigers.
That can kill you? I thought you meant, like, the predator.
I mean, also the predator. Yeah.
I mean, that would be a real concern.
Like, if we had predators or aliens...
That was my first thought. Like, don't worry about being chased by the predator.
Like if quiet place
if
up
it's
in here.
Danny Glover's L.A. and the predator's hanging out in the city.
I mean, it has been hot lately with all these fires.
That's true. Okay, so predator aside, like we aren't faced with the threat of death on a daily basis. I mean, we are in an abstract
way.
Like when you get in a car, when you cross the street,
every
whatever.
Every time you cross the street, yeah.
Yeah, but that's that's not something that's scheduled that's a higher than normal
chance
of mortality.
You could have a heart attack.
Yes. My point is, it's not often you get in the car and drive to something that might kill you. Like, the act of getting in the car and driving might kill you, but, like, going and having a kid is a dangerous thing. Like, it's
you're not actively courting danger.
Yeah. And that was it. The other thing that somebody told me that was really helpful, one of our friends who is a dad said, look, because I asked him a question about the birth plan, and he was like, look, here's the deal with the birth plan. This is all shit you do to make you feel better going into it, to make you feel like you have some control over a situation where you have absolutely no control. And the moment you're in the room and the doctor or the nurse says, okay, we need to do this because the baby or your wife's health is in jeopardy, you're going to say, yes, fuck the birth plan. Here's what we're going to do. And that's the right thing to do every single time.
Yeah. Not
that's
be
what
precious
I like.
About it.
On that 52, I remember the one thing I do remember really well is that 52-hour conversation where all the doctors were kind of in the room with us. And we tried every pushing scenario that we could try, and nothing had worked. And I remember the tone in the room being not grave, but very serious.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't kidding around anymore. They were like, you have a decision to make. And, you know, the baby's going to come out one way or another, but, you know, we got to figure this out. And, like, it wasn't fun or joyous at that point. It was just like, please let this baby come out alive. And my wife stay alive as well. Like, everybody needs to live, please. That's, you know, after 52 hours and it's still not going right.
Well, you're at that point, your decision making
is awful. If you're an anxious person, if you're a worrier like me, I was worried. I remember Leah wanted to have a home birth.
Yeah, I remember this conversation.
And we watched this movie called The Business of Being Born about how hospital birth is a racket. It's a scam.
Yeah.
And how there's a growing movement towards home birth because it's more natural and blah, blah, blah.
Do you still feel this way?
No.
Yeah.
I was always skeptical about it.
Yeah.
I mean, they have some compelling numbers about the number. They want you to have a C-section because there's more profit in it and blah, blah, blah. It sounded very cynical to me. Not the racket part, but the point of view of the documentarian seemed to be that they were convinced that it was a racket and it was a scam.
Yeah.
And they show you all these wonderful videos of perfect home births. Because, of course, they don't show you the one that goes wrong at 4 o'clock in the morning. They show you the ones that are all perfect and lovely and soft focus and stuff. And we had a doula and a midwife and all this kind of stuff. And I remember saying to them, like, what's the percentage of home births that have to end up transferring to the hospital and then, like, end up being a C-section? And they were like, oh, it's very, very rare.
Congratulations, Gary.
Very rare.
Huh.
You don't have to worry about that. Don't worry. And, of course, it's exactly what happened to us.
And I don't feel like the doctor... I totally understand where that documentary is coming from in terms of doctors maybe pushing towards C-sections. I don't think it's for the money. It's for... like the success rate. They know that.
Right. The C-section is basically going to work.
It's going to work.
Because they're literally cutting a hole in the belly and just yanking the baby out.
Well, variables are limited.
Yeah. If there's any kind of complication, if there's cords in a weird spot or the baby's upside down or whatever the problem you can't diagnose or solve from the outside, the C-section lets you see what the problem is and fix it.
Yeah, and it's our like, cord, you know, was wrapped around the baby's neck twice.
If a door is locked and every key you have doesn't work, you can always just blow a hole in the door.
Yeah.
You're going to have to repair the door.
And you know that's going to work.
Yeah.
But I mean, the thing for me, for us, because we had that conversation with you guys, because we were like my wife, we were 6 months behind you. So we were starting as you guys were finishing.
Yeah, we were good guinea pigs for you guys.
Yeah, it was good.
We were a little bit ahead of
your early access period was very helpful for us as we moved toward release. But we sat down and talked about that kind of stuff. And like, there is it's compelling to not be in the sterile, terrifying hospital environment.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you're like, oh, okay, the risk assessment here is that this is a safer.
See, I'm the opposite. The sterile to me is not a bad thing. It means things are clean.
Oh, no,
no one likes being in a hospital, right? Because it generally means something's gone wrong in your life. Like someone that you know is sick or injured.
Yeah.
Right. So that's not good. And you even have that thing like the smell of hospitals. As soon as you associate it with a bad feeling because something's not right in your life. Something bad has happened.
Yeah.
Except when you're having a baby. That's the one good reason you can go to a hospital.
Yep.
And so I felt more comfortable. I was really, really nervous the whole time that the home birth part of the process was happening. Once we got to the hospital, although it ended up then being still a really long time, and I was very nervous, I felt better because at least I knew that this is the best place to be. We're surrounded by doctors and experts and people that do this all the time.
I mean, it's like if you're having a panic attack and you think you're having a stroke or something, you go to the hospital. As soon as you're sitting in the waiting room at the emergency room, you feel better. Because at least if you're going to have the stroke, this is the place you want to do it, in the waiting room at the emergency room of the hospital.
I've literally, because I'm such a worrier, I've literally had that where I'm like at the hospital for no good reason, like, or for no particular reason, like I might be visiting someone. I remember thinking, like, if I'm going to have a heart attack, might as well have it now.
Let's do it.
Because
yeah.
I'm in the best place. Like they can get me to an emergency room.
As long as you've pre-registered and have all your info written on the forms.
So, okay, so the baby's born. You guys, the other big difference, the other thing going for us in the hospital birth versus the home birth, the place that Norm and I had the kid, they give you a steak on the night before you check out.
You got
out.
A steak dinner.
Yeah, a big steak dinner.
I didn't get a fucking steak.
No, it's because you went to the public hospital.
It was
hospital.
A filet mignon steak dinner. Now, one of my friends threw some shade on this and said it was not a good steak. And I didn't. I wouldn't expect
a hospital steak to be great.
It's not a house of prime rib.
It's not your Morton's.
But it's not bad. It's better than airplane food and better than all the other food we had there. They put some real effort into it. And at the end of
ripped off now. Yeah. I didn't get a steak.
Yeah, it was delightful. It felt like special treatment.
Norm, it's the most expensive steak dinner you've ever had.
Well, I had to have a
steak. It's like how that free Jack and Coke at the blackjack table is actually the most expensive Jack and Coke you've ever had.
Here's a watered down $300
Jack and Coke.
Because you blew
waiting for it to show up.
It's a long story short, for Thanksgiving, I'm very thankful that everyone's happy.
So you really have something to be thankful
healthy,
for this Thanksgiving.
Yeah. That both Danica and the baby are healthy, and thankful for you guys for all your support that you and your families have given us and guiding us the entire way.
You guys did a good job.
How are you feeling like now today? Are you feeling sleep deprived? Are you feeling
very sleep deprived? Yeah. Maybe that's a conversation for another time, because we can do a whole other podcast about poop, because I've seen things.
When I would torture you with stories of poops and placentas and stuff, you'd always like, yeah. But again, you just get on with it, don't you?
You do. You just have to do it, because no one else is going to clean up.
Who's going to do it?
At 4 in the morning,
yep.
Only person that's going to do it is you. So when the baby...
And that baby poop, that meconium, that is some gross shit.
We're past the meconium.
Right.
It's like chocolate-flavored gummies. I took a picture.
We're at the phase now where it's like you have a giant vat of French's mustard that hasn't been used in 3 weeks. And so all the watery part goes to the top.
Yeah, man, that was
pushed.
Oh, it's all settled, yeah.
And then someone's hit the dispenser real high, and then... I've seen the poop come right out of the butt while looking at the butt.
Yeah. You know, if you don't shake
a
ketchup or...
There's a steak dinner, Gary.
Oh, I didn't get that. Yeah. That's bullshit. That. It looks quite good as well.
You get Perrier, too?
Why didn't I get that?
You went to the wrong hospital.
We went to UCSF Benioff. It's one of the best children's hospitals
in
the country.
Did they give you a steak?
No.
Yeah, you got fucked, yo.
I'm going to buy myself... You know what I'm going to do? 6 years later, I'm going to go to the store today. I'm going to buy myself a steak. I'm going to have that fucking steak.
There you go.
It's not going to be the same. You didn't earn it the hard way.
But I did, though. I'm just not getting the benefit until 6 years later.
There's a picture I've been waiting to show Norm. Oh, I don't think I can show this one. It might be too much. Okay, never mind.
What was that you were going to show?
I was going to show him the placenta picture, but it's a little revealing.
I think I told you this 6 years ago, because I showed you a picture of it, and you were not thrilled.
He almost hit the floor.
Did you see the placenta?
No, I did not see the placenta.
Why not?
We didn't keep any of it. The only gross thing that we kept was the umbilical cord that sticks out of the baby's belly button.
Yeah.
And that just fell off, so we have that in a little vial.
Yeah.
So that's like a reliquary. Yeah, exactly.
I had the doctor come over after the baby had been cleaned up and everything and cut the cord, and then they rushed the baby off to the
nursery.
Leah gets to see it briefly, but then, you know, it goes off. And then the doctors called me over to the table where the baby had been and said, "You should come over here and look at this."
Oh, no.
What's that? And they said, come and look. It's really interesting.
This is what happens when you peek over the curtain too much. Yeah. He knows that you're into it.
They said, come look. And it was the placenta. And the placenta was bifurcated. Uh-huh. It was basically two. You could see how there had been two placentas at one point, but they were kind of fused into one. And I said, so what's that all about? And they said, well, we think that at one point there might have been twins, but one didn't make it, or it got eaten by the other one.
So do you think you got the evil one or the good one?
What you're seeing here is, who knows? I don't know if I got the DeVito or the Schwarzenegger.
That's some real Hill House stuff.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's we think that what you're seeing here is the leftover of what might have been the second placenta. So that was fantastic. I mean, I've got pictures of that as well.
I think I
showed it to you to try and freak you out 6 years
and
ago.
I did not want to see the sense of
He's
this.
He's blocked
around,
it entirely.
So. But you sound
like you've been doing good. You've been okay.
I mean,
up to the task.
Every day is different, and again, I think we'll revisit this topic because it's only 2 weeks.
How many times are you up in the night?
Two.
Two times a night, but for
every
how long?
3 hours.
For 4 hours and 6 hours.
Oh, how many times do I get up?
How many times do you have to get up in the night?
Two times, and about an hour each time.
Okay. That's not so bad.
That's not so bad.
How did the first bath go?
At home?
Yeah, Gina and I had the biggest fight of our marriage during the first bath.
I mean, very gently.
My advice,
yeah,
as your attorney, is, and this goes for you at home too, is when you're going to do something like a first bath, converse about the strategy for that before you just jump into it. Like, have a game plan that everybody agrees on, because I jumped into the first bath in the same way that the nurse did right after our daughter was born.
Lots of scrubbing.
Very fast. Get her in, get her out. Because it was cold. It was January. So it was cold, drafty house. I was trying to get her in and out as fast as we could.
Yeah.
And that was not that. We had a really core disagreement about the speed and intensity with which we should handle the bath.
The baby's like a Tamagotchi right now. There's only four states of being, right? There's sleeping. There's eating.
There's hungry.
Hungry, pooping, or gas.
Yeah.
And those are the four signs. And so right now it's just deciphering, are you tired? If you're tired, good, we'll swaddle you and put you to sleep. Are you hungry? Do you have gas?
Yeah.
And
I didn't even know that there are different cries that you can differentiate.
Well, we've learned that if the feet are moving, it's gas. If the hands are moving, a lot, arms are moving, hungry.
Yeah. Right. Your baby does a good rooting face too. Like, so he knows. He's ready to go.
That's what we're figuring out right now. It's a lot of baby talk, and I'm sure there'll be more of it. But one of the things I did in that week leading up to baby being born while waiting is I played a fuck ton of Red Dead Redemption 2.
It's the thing everybody should do right before the baby's born.
Oh, my God.
If you want to do something really boring that's going to prepare you for days and days of not sleeping, Red Dead 2 will get you sleepy and ready to go.
And I haven't been able to talk to anyone about Red Dead Redemption 2. I hear you both have been playing it.
A little bit.
Let's talk about Red Dead.
Okay.
It's amazing.
That's one opinion.
What? I love this game.
Okay. Why do you love the game, Norm?
I went into the game loving the Westworld TV show.
Okay.
Right.
Is that your first entree to Westerns, really? Or did you...
Western, you a, like the genre? Hall? No, yeah. I've seen...
Well, I know you've seen them, but like, did anything grab you
before? I didn't play
before?
The first Red Dead.
That's probably game. Best. It was a good game at the time. It has not aged well.
And I went into the game knowing that I wanted something like a Westworld experience where you were put into this kind of open world Western and you could engage and pick up like a very, it's an adventure game, but very RPG light in terms of like meeting people and going on adventures.
There's a couple of bars.
And I'm getting that and more.
Are you role playing like you're a guy who went to Westworld to go on vacation?
No, because I would be killing everyone. And you don't have that amount of freedom.
You can kill everyone.
You can.
It would be hard work.
Yeah, yeah. The game is massive. And I just not a space landscape, which is gorgeous, playing it on the Xbox One X 4K with HDR. It's one of the most beautiful games I've ever seen. And I know people complain about how slow it is, but I really like how slow it is.
I don't mind the speed.
The number one tip I got from reading a review was turning off the minimap. And I just use the compass and listen to people tell me and try to remember where, because when I have the mini map on the bottom left hand corner, it's almost like GPS, and I'm looking at that more than I'm looking at the landscapes.
Well, even if you have the mini map off, you can always hit down or up on the D-pad
exactly,
or
and then
pop
it pops
up for a second
exactly.
or two.
And the compass actually has your path, and it has like tells you what direction you're supposed to move into your path.
Is that the minimal option, or is that
that's the very minimal?
That's the one that I do.
And so, walking and just taking in the landscape, listening to what people are saying, reading the road signs, and taking my time getting from. I actually want the world to be bigger. I want to take longer. Because it still feels like a Rockstar game where everything's a little compressed because it's a game world. So when you're traveling from, you know, the furthest west city to the easternmost city, it's like only like 15 minutes of horseback riding when you're supposed to be basically traveling across the United States at that point. I can't get enough of it.
So there've been moments that I feel like I'm playing a movie, but also I'm like watching a movie, but also I have agency as the main character, which are magic. Like really, really good. There's a scene where you get drunk, you have to go to town and get really loaded.
Yep.
And some stuff happens, and like some of those missions are amazing. Some of the tutorial missions are really good, where you go out and somebody goes out and teaches you how to fish or how to hunt or whatever. And honestly, that whole opening sequence in the snow, the Hateful Eight bit, is astounding. It's really, really neat. For me, it's the parts where the game gets real rock starry, where like I had to make a bunch of changes to the controls to make the shooting work, to make the steering and shooting and stuff work.
Really?
Like if you turn off acceleration on the sticks, that helps a ton.
I mean,
gets auto-aim a little less floaty.
So easy.
Yeah, but I'm talking about stuff like steering your horse.
Mm. I run into trees a lot.
Yeah, like I killed a horse by running into a tree. That wasn't great. I was bending over to like going to pick something up that was on the edge of a cliff, and I just ran off the cliff. Like, I feel like that happens once or twice. It's maybe on me, but when it's consistently happening and I'm not touching anything, that seems like kind of bad design. And then the thing that makes me crazy is the narrow shoots on some of the story missions where, like, if you get 10 feet off the trail to the right or the left and it just fails you out and you have to start the whole damn thing over again.
That's a very rock star thing.
It's bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's gorgeous.
Get too far behind someone, and or if, like, there are main story missions. Right? There is this big story that takes a long time to play. If you just rush the story, you could do it in, I don't know, like 20
people
hours
said, like,
or something.
20 or 30 hours, yeah.
I'm finding myself enjoying the stranger encounters. I think there are over 100 random encounters that can happen. And these have
is that like the guy laying under the horse or something like
exactly.
that on the side of the road?
Yeah. Guy on the side of the road, someone yelling at you. And I love this. Though that's the stuff that feels the most Westworld about it. When I'm just walking along the countryside and side quests pop up and you hear someone yelling in the distance or you see
hey, stranger!
Exactly. Or a plume of smoke. A plume of smoke is a great thing.
Yeah, or a light in the distance.
That's such a Firewatch thing, the plume of smoke.
And then you happen on, you know, a camp of bandits or a house of, and every one of those encounters is designed to have a full story, and you can approach them however you want, and they're inconsequential because they're just stranger
just
missions.
I mean, the thing that they did that's really neat is they made a game that feels like a Bethesda game, like a Bethesda RPG, like your Fallout or your mm-hmm. Skyrim or whatever, without having the massive game state. Like Bethesda games, the reason Bethesda games are often buggy is that they have essentially infinite game state, right? Like if somebody wants to, they can go collect one of the 300,000 wheels of cheese in Skyrim and pile them all up in one building, and the game has to know how to deal with that. That's really hard to do.
And in that sense, this is more like Westworld because I can, you know, go into a town and I can kill everyone in this room, but if I come back half an hour later, it could be repopulated because the loops will just recycle.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things. Like, one of the first things I did was shoot one of the shopkeepers in the head just to see what would happen, and then mm-hmm. I paid the bounty. And when I came back to town the next time, he was there, but he had an eye patch.
A
bandage over his eye where I'd popped him. And, like, that's magic. That's amazing.
There are things that, like, it's not even really a spoiler. One thing, in the first town you go to, there's, like, a...
Valentine?
In Valentine, there's a shopkeeper. I think it's the doctor, but there's one shop if you just walk around because you're trying to see what buildings you can enter. And one of the things that always frustrated me about GTA is that when you have a city like LA or New York, the city looks great, but everything's facades, right? You can't enter anything. Now there are plenty of buildings you can't enter in Red Dead, but because it's the Wild West and because it's open world, and because there are fewer buildings, there are many buildings that have interiors that you can enter, and you can actually see through windows. You can peek inside. So one of the buildings in the main town, the first town, you go look in the back of the window, and there's like a guy counting money, and there's like a locked door, and you realize the shopkeeper is running some illicit operation in the back. And then because you've spotted that, you can go in the front and you can hold them up and open the back door. You can rob them in the back. So like you uncover things like that. You pull back the veil between, and people have these backstories that you can uncover.
Yeah, they've done an amazing amount of world building, and I would say that as an exercise in world building, it's a tremendous achievement. I don't know if it's, and I'm not going to say if it's a good game or a bad game, because that's, you know, again, a very subjective thing. From my point of view, I have struggled to enjoy the game. I've struggled to enjoy it as a game. The sluggish pace of it, and again, that's a deliberate choice that they've made. They don't want to make an Assassin's Creed type game where you're running around and you can scale buildings, and you can do whatever you
want.
Where
you have superpowers.
Yeah, where you basically have superpowers, or even GTA where there's a lot of running around and craziness. There's a lot of kind of, even the sprint is relatively slow. And it, when you're in the camp, it slows you down even more. And there is this, it feels like you're moving through molasses a lot of the time. And movement is slow. And everything in the game, I think it was either Klepek or someone at Vice at Waypoint who said that the best word to describe the game is friction. There's a lot of the game's constantly pushing back and giving you a lot of friction. Anything that you want to do, that you need to do, is hard. Even something like there's fast travel in the game, but you've even got to earn that. Like, you've got to go to the train station and buy a ticket. It's not just, I'm going to press X to fast travel. So everything, it makes you work for everything. And I think that if you're willing to meet the game on its own terms and play it that way, you can find real satisfaction, because it really does feel like Westworld. It really does feel like you're living in that world. I had an encounter a couple of nights ago where I saw a campfire. I was just moseying down the trail one evening on my horse, and there was a little campfire off in the distance. I thought, I'll go see what that light's all about. You know, maybe there's something for me to do over there. Sometimes you go up to camps and they just tell you to fuck off.
Yeah, that's it.
Just get out of here. This is our camp. And you go, okay, there's nothing for me to do here. And you just, or you could kill them, I suppose.
Yeah, you kill them.
And rob them. But I just decided to leave them alone. And then there was a guy sitting there, and he's like, he's drunk. He says, come sit next to me, stranger. I'll tell you a story. And you sit down next to him, and he tells this, and you have a choice to, he says, give me some whiskey and I'll tell you about my troubles. And you have a choice to either give him the whiskey. I had a bunch of whiskey, so I gave him some of my bourbon. And he goes on a whole story about how he used to do this work for the government, like clearing out Indian reservations, camps. And he talks about how then government boys, they pay well, but the money runs out, but the regrets remain and all this kind of stuff. And it's just a sad story that he tells you. And then he passes out. So I robbed him. I looted.
He took your money back.
He fell asleep.
To get your booze back.
He just collapsed over on his chair. So I took his money and left. And that was just something that it was just like an incidental moment that happened in the game. And when the game is doing that sort of thing, it feels really, really good.
Those are the best moments, like far
and
away.
And those are the
I enjoy those moments better than the actual missions.
What I'm saying. Those random stranger encounters, those are the things that I remember the most. And your character has a journal. And all those encounters,
they all go in the journal.
I didn't know that.
And the order in which you do them. So
everything
really
that happens
your,
in the game, he writes down in that journal.
It's your experience.
So he's writing his penny book.
Yeah,
and he draws and
confessing
out.
To all his crimes if he ever gets caught. Unfortunately,
no, I mean, yeah, and he's going to get hung either
he
way.
He sketches too, because he's a little bit of an artist.
Yeah, he draws.
And
things.
Sometimes I found myself just going through the journal and reliving what I've done in the game, because there are things I've done that really feel like they were years ago.
Every few encounters I review them. Every few encounters I review them via the journal.
And it's like memories. And the deliberateness of the game, the slow pacing, if it wasn't populated with those encounters, if there are enough of those, then it does feel very plotting.
When it's an experience, it's great. When it's a game, that's when I feel like it's lacking. Like, the gunplay is not brilliant. The controls are not great.
Yeah.
And again, it's just so... I think part of the reason why I've struggled with it is because I've had this point of comparison all along. My wife has been playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and now she's on Origins. She's been playing the Assassin's Creed games. And there's similar games on a base level, I guess. You know, you go around towns, there's side quests, you whistle for your horse, your horse comes and gets you. But in Assassin's Creed, everything is pretty easy to do.
It's gamey.
It's gamey.
Yeah.
And it's all couched in the world of game systems. Like, if you want to, for example, in Assassin's Creed's Odyssey... I'll give you a couple examples. In Assassin's Creed Odyssey, you have bounty hunters that come after you. And that's true in Red Dead as well. To pay off your bounty, and you can pay off your bounty to get them off your back in both games. To pay off the bounty in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, you go to the map screen and hit X to pay off the bounty. To pay off the bounty in Red Dead, you have to ride to the nearest post office, probably through territory where you're wanted by bounty hunters. Mm-hmm. And then you pay it off once you get to the postmaster station. So that's like an extra chore that you've got to do. It's not just a button press.
Yeah.
When you whistle for your horse in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, it just immediately shows up and it's by your side. And when you whistle for your horse in Red Dead, as you know, maybe it's around somewhere. Maybe it's fucked off somewhere. And it takes a while for it to mosey on back to you.
Yeah.
And you got to go get it. There was a mission that I had. And they did this deliberately. And again, because they want you to experience the world of the game. I stole a stagecoach. I rode out to the middle of nowhere where I had to leave the stagecoach to stage it for a later train robbery I was going to do. And then, of course, I don't have my horse. I tried whistling for my horse. It says your horse is out of whistling range.
That's a Breath of the Wild thing. Breath of the Wild.
Well, the horse is not coming.
Yep.
And it says return to the camp.
Yep.
I am miles from the camp.
Well, you're not
thinking
of it as a GTA.
To walk back there would take Well, so, what I had to do
you
was
to
I
steal a horse.
So I thought, I'll get a horse.
Yeah.
So I wander up to some horses, and they scatter.
You can always rob someone. You can always steal.
So that's what
horse.
I had to do. I had to stand on the road, wait for some poor bastard to come by on a horse. I shot him and took his horse.
Well, think about that. In GTA, you would have no problem yanking someone out of their car and taking their car.
No, you don't even think twice about it.
Here, the fact that you're thinking about it, the fact that you feel for these NPCs going down the trail because you say hi to them every time,
yeah,
that's immersion.
I was going to say, I have a hard time playing GTA 5, you're Trevor Phillips. I have no problem murdering everybody
in
my path.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
Trevor doesn't care.
But Michael's a shitbag. I can't remember the kid's name, but the kid was the good guy in GTA right. 5. Like, I still didn't have any compunction about murdering people with reckless abandon in that game, because there's a lot of them. With this one, they all feel much more realized.
Yeah, I didn't want to shoot someone,
that's
but I needed
right.
a horse.
Yeah,
well, sorry, buddy.
This is another example.
I need your horse.
Well, you can lasso him off, just drag him behind the horse.
I could have done that.
You still his honor. Yeah. But this is another example where Rockstar doesn't do a great job telling you what you can or can't do, because
I didn't
know that sometimes if you have no horse, you could stand on the edge of the road and you could kind of you could hitchhike and get a stagecoach to take you to the nearest town.
Well, that's nice.
But they don't tell you that because there's no tutorial, because you know, that's how Rockstar designs
though,
their games.
If you're standing there on the side of the road and a stagecoach come by, you could just take a stagecoach and then you have a stagecoach.
I pointed this out on Twitter and I thought it was a good distinction. They said Rockstar tells you how to play the game, or they tell you the controls, but they don't teach you the controls.
They show you how you can play the game.
And you're discovering, I mean, it's one of those games that, like, many, many hours in, you're still doing tutorials because there's so much for the game to show you. Like when we did
the end of the second chapter, there's still tutorials.
I mean, the third chapter, and in the third chapter, you learn how to fish on a boat.
Oh wow, I haven't done that yet.
Oh yeah, you'll go out. Hosea and Dutch will take you out on a fishing trip on a boat.
So some of my favorite moments are like the poker. I played poker for probably 2 hours the other day, and the poker game.
I like it.
Like the poker game, unlike most video game poker games, it's actually a good poker engine. Like the NPCs play smart. They don't bluff like with reckless abandon.
Well,
for the most part, they have tells that aren't super
that's
obvious.
The thing, because they have avatars. Mm-hmm. And it's better than any just iOS, you know, phone poker game, because there are a little bit of stakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's $2 out of your whatever your cash is.
Seven.
But you feel like you can actually lose money, you can gain money, and you feel like if you clear out a table, you've done something, even though it took 4 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can play
You play the game with the knife and the
five finger fillet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't done that one yet.
Yeah. Yes. And I played some dominoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hunting stuff, like the hunting big game, those little side missions are really tense and compelling, because you know you're going to die, you're going to lose something. It's a pain in the butt.
It's interesting. It is when I'm doing the missions that the game feels the most gamey and the most rock star. It's like, okay, chase this guy's running away. You got to chase him. Now I've caught him. Now I've got to bring him back to camp. But it just feels very much like these chores you've got to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you decide, and I used to do this I remember I used to just do yoga in GTA. And I would just, it wasn't the fact that I enjoyed doing the yoga. It was the fact that the game let me do anything I wanted.
Right.
And I can just do whatever I want. So if you decide today, I'm not going to do this mission, will wait for me. You know, it's not going anywhere. The story's not going to progress without me. Today, in today's play session, instead of doing a mission, I'm going to go hunting, or I'm going to go fishing, or I'm just going to go just wander around, look for side quests.
I mean, honestly, if the control, if like the part of a vast majority of my problem with the game, the challenge that I have with the game, is that it uses the GTA control scheme, which it feels arbitrary and incoherent in this 2018, when we have a million really, really tight control schemes, and like we know what a tight game control feels like, and we don't.
Yeah, like
Spider-Man doesn't have that. Yeah,
that's a game that controls well.
Yeah, like the camera's responsive, the character stops on it. I mean, he is Spider-Man, so he's fast. But like, this doesn't feel. It doesn't. It. When I was playing Spider-Man and I'm fighting Tombstone and I'm swinging around the rafters and I'm like, I feel like Spider-Man, and it feels so good to swing around and have him yell at me and be like, come down from there. I need to punch you. And then you come down and you punch him a couple times in the back and swing away again. You feel like Spider-Man in a way that video games are doing something amazing.
Well, I feel like a degenerate in the West.
Well, I mean,
turn of the century.
You are a degenerate in the West.
I think,
I don't feel like I'm really good at shooting. Like, I feel like if you've been a outlaw gang for 20 years, you should be fucking good at shooting people.
I'm pretty good at shooting people.
Okay, yes, but you use auto aim and all that bullshit. So I just feel like it's not.
I do think that it suffered going from, because Spider-Man was the last game that I played all the way through the completion. I played it for many, many hours.
Yep.
And then I didn't play anything else for a bit. And then I played Red Dead. And I think it suffered coming off the back of Spider-Man because they really are very, very different games. Spider-Man is so responsive and so fast.
And I got bored.
And so easy to get into and play. And Red Dead is none of those things.
Yeah. And they're both open world games to some extent. And Spider-Man's Manhattan is massive. But I got bored because of how fast I could move around. And
I just took the train after a while.
And it didn't become any interesting going from, you know, going from Midtown up to the Bronx. Like, none of that felt interesting. In Red Dead, when I go from the city that I haven't been in, you know, a week of play, Valentine or Strawberry, from to a new town, it really feels like I'm trekking back and going back to an old place. Like, I'm making more memories in this game than I did in Spider-Man.
I mean, I feel like Spider-Man, they tried to fill those voids by adding a bunch of collectibles and stuff to do along the way.
Yeah.
Like the Black Hat missions and the fighting the checkpoints and all that stuff.
Taking photos.
Like all that stuff is the solution to that problem. I agree it's not as compelling a solution as actually making the world really interesting.
Norm, but how far into the game are you?
I'm in chapter 4. So
okay. I just started chapter 3. I just showed up in Rhodes, which is the new town.
You'll love that. Yeah. That one, the story missions are really good.
Okay.
A lot of personality.
Sadie. Sadie started to come to the fore now.
I think this is the aspect of the game that's maybe, I feel like, still a little underdeveloped. There are 22 other people in your camp that you travel with, and they're each supposed to, over time, reveal their personalities. And yes, I know Lenny, I know Hosea, and I know, you know, Dutch, of course, but like when they were promoting this game, and Javier, when they were promoting this game, they had these like big, like, you know, these character cards telling you all the personalities of these people you'd be living with because they're your family, and it really takes a long time before you really start getting some affinity for some of the characters you don't interact with a lot.
Well, but you should you've been living with these people for 20 years, some of them. You should know them, and it shouldn't
I know, but I don't care about Mrs. Grimshaw in the first three chapters of the game. It's not until, you know, chapter 4 when stuff happens. So everyone has their day. And that's something, hopefully, by the end of the game, I'll really feel a connection to all these characters. Well,
so the parallel for me on that is, I don't know if you've watched Orange is the New Black, but in Orange is the New Black, each of the episodes and the larger seasons kind of has an arc around one of the characters. Mm-hmm. And each of the episodes usually reveals some backstory about...
It's like Lost.
Yeah, why this person is here and what happened to them previously and all that. And I feel like each of the missions that you go on with one of those people gives you those hints. But with 20 of them, it takes a while.
Yeah, yeah. I could talk about Red Dead for days and days. It's what I've been playing when the baby goes to bed at night.
Yeah,
and, eating into my sleep. Norm. I should probably go to sleep.
You should go to sleep.
Yeah, you should really be catching up on your sleep.
I want to go back. Your job now is to keep your wife and your child alive. That's all you have to do. Red Dead can wait. It'll still be there. You can murder people on your own time later.
All right. I want to, before we move on to the next segment, we're going to talk about some pop culture news. I want to thank the other sponsor that makes this episode possible, and that's Lutron's Caseta Smart Lighting System. Caseta by Lutron takes your smart speaker, like your Alexa, your Google Home, your Apple HomePod, and makes it more powerful by letting you control lights with your voice. Caseta is the most connected smart lighting brand, and it works with more smart home devices than any other smart lighting brand, letting you pair lights with other things like security devices, thermostats, and music systems like Nest, Sonos, and more. And because it's from Lutron, you can rest easy knowing it'll work. You know, we're raising a baby right now. We have no hands free. We got two hands holding the baby's legs, two hands wiping the diapers. We want to use our voice to turn on and off the lights when it's 4 a.m. So this is a system that lets us do that. So get smart lighting the smart way with Caseta by Lutron. Search for Caseta, that's Caseta, or check out Lutron.com to learn more. Caseta by Lutron, welcome your home, your peace of mind. All right, let's talk about some pop culture. We're going to jump through this relatively quickly.
Is there tech news this week?
We'll get to tech news. Oh, this
tech coming
news is
up
after
okay.
pop culture.
I didn't realize.
I clearly don't listen to this podcast much.
Well, yeah. I mean, I when I was on it, it used to be all about tech. Now it's about babies and video games and popular culture. It
turns out that's the stuff that excites us more
podcast.
These days.
Okay. Topical podcast. Nobody wants it's your true crime bullshit.
So over this past weekend, Disney and Disneyland released a first behind-the-scenes video of their upcoming Star Wars land. I know they're not calling that Galaxy's Edge. Is that what it's called? That they're building
the Outer Rim?
Something like that.
Yeah.
They're building in Disneyland parks right now, and it shows a lot of the stuff under construction, a lot of time lapses of walkers being built, and it's all set to the new score that John Williams made for this land. Have you guys seen the video?
No.
Oh, it looks so good. I know you guys are both Disneyland aficionados. You guys,
I've never been.
What?
Never been to Disneyland.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you plan on going? You have no interest.
I'll take my kid at some point.
Will your kid Like, does she know about Disneyland?
Oh, look, man, if you let them watch any, here's a pro tip from somebody who made the wrong choice like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Don't put the Disney app on your TV. Don't put it on an iPad. Don't let them anywhere near it.
Because a lot of ads for Disneyland come holidays.
They don't do ads for toys or anything usually, but the ads for Disneyland. Hey, look, you can. Yeah,
well, it's $150 a person a day. You know, they can make a lot of money.
Yeah. We took ours to Disneyland and she loved it. You should definitely do it.
Yeah, we should.
I'm really curious. Is this new Star Wars themed land going to be for kids, or is it more for you and me?
Yeah, it's for us.
I think it's for
kids. Kids don't like Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, kids like Star Wars, but the things they like about Star Wars are maybe more the droids and the Jar Jars.
Of the kids, like of the 5-year-olds that I know, like Minecraft, Fortnite.
Fortnite land.
Fortnite land
that
people would go to.
That would be insane. That's going to be E3 next year, right?
Yeah. All the princess stuff, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Your PJ Masks, very popular with the kids these days. The Incredibles, very popular with the kids.
Yep.
None of them.
It's going to be a good couple of years after they open this thing before I go.
Because the line's going to be crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be suffocatingly miserable when they first open it.
I mean, it's just like when they opened Cars Land, a whole land about one movie.
Do you remember when
they
opened Harry Potter Land?
Yeah.
Oh, it was Universal. Yeah.
And it was like a mosh pit.
It's still rough.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really curious because this video doesn't reveal any of the interesting new like Imagineering technologies that they've built. You know, we've heard rumblings of all the new weird droid stuff.
Yeah, the autonomous droids.
And how they're going to get people through Millennium Falcon ride, right? How are you going to put thousands of people through this every hour?
This was Family Robinson Treehouse, since that's what they got rid of to put in there.
No, it's going to be a ride.
Oh, really?
It's going to be like Star Tours, but in the Falcon. How are they going to do that?
Everybody gets their own cockpit?
They'll shove 20 people in the cockpit of the Falcon.
What if they do it like the old Epcot rides, where they have like the four seats in the Falcon cockpit?
I don't know.
Like you walk through the mock-up of the Falcon, and you get up into the neck. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Really looking forward to that. But in addition to that, Disney announced Disney Plus. That's the name of their new subscription service that's coming out next year.
How much is it going to cost?
Less than Netflix.
How much does Netflix cost? Like $12?
Do you know how much Netflix costs?
No, it used to be $7.99.
Depends on the tier.
Yeah, if you have the 4K, I think it's like $12.
I think it's about $12 for 4K.
Yeah, and I know Netflix is planning to experiment in a mobile-only tier. Who uses mobile-only Netflix?
Kids.
Is that for the kids?
Gen Z.
$5 or $6, $7 just for a mobile-only if you want to. That's not a way to watch. If they're spending hundreds of millions on blockbuster movies like Outlaw King and Ballad of Buster Scruggs, like that's watch on your phone.
Do you remember the old man complaint? Oh man, why would anybody ever watch video on the internet? The quality is really bad. YouTube sucks. The quality is bad. And
where do you watch video on YouTube?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why you'll never see Chris Nolan sign up for a Netflix exclusive deal, because he wants people to watch movies in theaters.
He wants film.
But Disney Plus coming out next year, I know they've confirmed Loki, a TV show for Loki with Tom Hiddleston.
Ooh.
And on the Star Wars side, they have...
There's a Winter Soldier Falcon show.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. It's going to be a buddy thing. So,
is Ant-Man going to show up in there? I feel like that's a good interaction.
I don't think they
Falcon
can get Paul
Rudd.
For Star Wars, they have The Mandalorian. Force announced casting for Mandalorian.
This is after they killed the Boba Fett movie.
Yes. Well, probably it was in... This is the Jon Favreau thing that's been in development since...
Before.
Or concurrently... I don't know.
Is this set in real time? Is this a prequel? Is this old? Like Old Republic? Do we know anything about it? Because like,
I think it's set after
Rebels.
I think it's set after Return of the Jedi.
Okay. I thought so in the old canon that no longer counts, I think the Mandalorians were mostly wiped out, right? At some point in the past. There's some sort of big war between like Old Republic and like the KOTOR era and the...
Well, KOTOR era, you're going back thousands of years.
Yeah. Because the Mandalores there was a lot of Mandalore business in the KOTOR
games. If you ever watch Clone Wars or Star Wars Rebels, there's a lot of Mandalorian storylines. Okay. You can learn a lot of Mandalore.
Ooh.
You like that?
I would have gone with Mandalore lore.
Nice.
Mandalore lore.
Pedro Pascal, who is in Game of Thrones, and he was also in the Kingsman sequel, he's going to play the Mandalorian. I think it's a good choice.
Who was
good
he
choice.
In the Kingsman sequel?
He was the guy with the whip. He was
the
one that wasn't Channing Tatum.
I just saw him in a commercial for socks, and he was doing like a Fred Astaire dance routine. It was pretty good.
That's pretty good. I like somebody who can dance.
Yeah, got good variety.
And they also, I think, I don't know if this is officially announced, but it's on the IMDb page, Gina Carano, who is, she was in...
Oh, she was in Haywire, right?
Yes, she was Haywire, and she was in the Fast Six? I want to say Fast Six.
She was the one bad guy?
She was the one who ended up being bad. It was the one with the airplane, you know, the 40-mile-long runway. She's the MMA fighter.
Oh, right. Okay,
that was American Gladiator.
Yeah.
And then is now a TV star, movie star.
So hold on. But they're doing the Cassian Star Wars.
So that's
show
the other
too,
news. So
right?
They also announced that there will be a Cassian Andor series.
That's exciting. So presumably it's going to be a prequel to Rogue One.
Well, yeah. I mean, you couldn't really do anything afterwards.
I mean, they could, but it would maybe be a little one note.
What do you think, Gary? What do you think it should be in a Cassian Andor story?
I've got no idea. I honestly have no thoughts on the matter. I don't. It's, you know, I mean, you know, here's the thing. I spent 5 years working inside the Star Wars universe. I worked on Rogue One. I worked on Star Wars Rebels. I worked on some of the books, and I worked on The Last Jedi comic adaptation. So I've done a lot of
that's all out now, right?
That's all out now.
Yeah, it was really good. I enjoyed it.
And are there character Bibles for these characters going into those, or even for a show like Rebels, right?
Not necessarily written down, but like writers know, you know, who the characters are.
Mm-hmm.
When we would sit in the Rebels writers' room and we'd do a story on like Saw Gerrera or whatever, we would know who that character was because he'd already been established in Rogue One or some of the Mandalorian characters.
But enough left open-ended so that a lot of the stuff could be filled in for presumably things like this.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I'm excited about it. You know, as someone who worked on Rogue One, I thought Cassian was a cool character, so I'm interested to see what they do with him. I hope that K2 is in there as well. It's an opportunity for them to show how the two of them came together. Some of that has been told, I believe, in comic books and things like that. Whether or not they'll differentiate from that, I don't know.
That's a really interesting thing.
But it's, you know, the idea of a show about rebel spies is perfectly tailored for television, right?
Well, I mean,
you can do different missions each week and so forth. I have no idea. Like, I guess my point is this. Having worked... My time in Star Wars is, as far as I know, unless they call me for something else at some point down the road, is done. Like, I'm back to being a consumer. And the last projects that I had any kind of inside track on, you've seen them all. So Episode 9, Mandalorian, you know, Cassian Andor and things like that. I know little teeny tiny bits and pieces, but I'm really no more educated or I don't have any more of an inside track than the next person. I'm back to being just a consumer again. So I'm excited to see. I'll definitely subscribe to Disney Plus.
Yeah.
I'm going to be interested to see on the wider level what Disney Plus is. I hope it's not just all this new stuff. I really hope that they put all the Disney Vault in there as well.
God,
I want, you know, Bedknobs and Broomsticks and Steamboat Willie and every short they ever made.
Is Bedknobs and Broomsticks Disney? I don't think it is.
Yes,
it is.
Is it?
Yeah, Dark Age Disney. Oh. Yeah.
I want like the 90s cartoons too. I want like Darkwing Duck.
I would pay if they wanted to do different tiers. I would pay whatever the top tier is to have access to like the full Disney Vault.
See,
yeah.
I think they're going to do it like Netflix because they know that people will subscribe to services even if you don't have everything on demand all at once.
Netflix has an excuse. The thing to think about is that Disney has a vast, vast library of content. When you think about all their live action kid stuff,
everything, you know, that's been on ABC that ABC owns.
Yeah.
Full House,
wow.
Presumably.
All of Family Matters.
Yeah. That stuff, you never know who owns it because it could have been like the production company.
But just the stuff that's under the Disney brand, like, you know, the Disney Family Channel.
Yeah.
I don't think all
the Mickey Mouse Club,
iCarly, and
I think
Hannah Montana, and every one of those shows, they can put the entire run of those shows on Disney
Plus. They could,
and they should.
Not initially. I think it's going to be a rollout. I think they're gonna do their market research and know that enough people will subscribe in the first wave for these new shows, maybe for all the Marvel movies, maybe for all the Pixar movies, and then they can say, coming 2019, now we've processed it all for Disney Plus, now you have all your Hannah Montanas, and get another wave of subscribers.
Honestly, the thing that would make me, like, I'm going to sign up regardless because I have a kid, but I feel like the thing that I would like to have more than anything else is the short, like all the shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the Mickey Mouse shorts, all the Donald Duck shorts, all the Chip and Dale shorts, all the Pluto shorts, you can't get them. They're not available to watch.
Yep. And even stuff that was more episodic, like more game show stuff, you know, like Nickelodeon launched theirs. And I was trying to find old Legends of the Hidden Temple on YouTube. None of it's there because it's only on this Nickelodeon service. And Jeopardy was just put on Netflix, and people are binging the
I think they'll do different tiers, and I think that, you know, you'll get, obviously, at your main tier, you'll get your Mandalorian, and you'll get your Winter Soldier show, and all of the kind of banner pieces of content. But I would pay an extra tier to get full access to the Vault and Chippendale Rescue Rangers and Hannah Montana and, you know,
and that's how they'll get you.
X-Men the animated series.
Yeah, and Mickey Mouse Clubhouse and everything they've ever done.
I don't think they have the right. That's 20th Century still has the rights to that stuff. I don't think, though.
20th Century Fox is under the Disney umbrella now.
Well, that's how they'll get you, because if you'll pay that extra tier, if you'll pay an extra $5, you'll binge that stuff in the first couple months, but you'll probably not cancel. And you'll probably pay, you know, you'll over the lifetime of your Disney Plus subscription, you'll pay 50% more than you would have paid
But
otherwise.
Will's right as well for, like, the real Disney collectors, like the D23 diehards, like those crazy motherfuckers that you see them at Disneyland and they're covered with all the pins and everything and they know every piece of Disney trivia and they've been to see every Disney movie 50 times.
Respectable people.
They are, I mean, fine people.
At Gary Witta on Twitter if you have comments.
Those are the people that, I mean, they've already collected them as well, but like a lot of things you're talking about, you only get them at Disneyland, like those kind of metal, those old collector's tins of the old black and white shorts and things like that, and things that are very, very hard to find. They're not on YouTube. Disney keeps them in their vault.
They're not on Netflix. You can't buy a DVD or Blu-ray collection of a lot of that stuff. Like, you can get
But this is the perfect opportunity for them to make that available at some kind of premium tier. Yeah. I think the collector diehards, the D23 crowd, would be totally into that.
Look, the other way to look at this is that right now, like, we have YouTube so we can get Disney Now, right? We have Hulu TV, so we can get Disney Now.
Do you remember Wonderful World of Disney? Did they have that?
Yeah, that was great.
Saturday
night.
Like Michael Eisner hosted.
Well, it was Walt Disney originally.
Disney hosted collection of entertainment.
Oh, yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a science fiction thing on when I was a kid that they did a generation ship that was going to a nearby star as an arc situation, and they screwed it with like one adult and a bunch of teenagers. It was an amazing thing. I don't remember what it was called.
That
I have no idea.
Nightmarish for the adult.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it was awful with a bunch of hormonal teens. But if you guys know what that's called, I'd love to know. It was like post Battlestar, probably.
So it sounds like we're all on board to subscribe to Disney Plus. And that goes back to the question of what's your limit? How many of these services we subscribe to? Is there a hard number or is it a dollar amount?
I was thinking about this the other day, how many different, because if you look at my Apple TV, that has them all laid out in a gallery. So let's think about it. So I subscribe to Netflix.
Okay, same.
Amazon Prime, although that's part of a broader
deal. That's not counted out. That's Amazon's Trojan horse and they're getting you to pay for it, amortizing it within Prime.
We were paying for Prime even before they added the video.
I know. And now they're
raising
the
nevertheless, it's a service I pay for.
Sure. Okay.
Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, HBO Now, BritBox,
okay.
Shudder.
What's Shudder?
Shudder is all horror.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
It's fantastic.
Okay.
$4.99 a month for all the horror you could imagine.
Wow. That's more than I need.
Hallmark Movies Now.
Oh my God.
Because as you know, I've got to have my Hallmark Christmas movies.
Yeah. What about WWE?
No, I don't pay for WWE.
Okay. Okay.
And I'll pay for this Criterion channel when that shows up.
Did you pay for Filmstruck?
In a manner of speaking.
I don't understand what that means.
I have access to Filmstruck.
Okay.
I'm part of the problem.
Okay.
I love Filmstruck. Filmstruck is great.
So I do Netflix. We have Hulu and Hulu TV, so that's where our cable channels come from.
Yeah.
And I think we pay for HBO Now.
Here, let me rephrase
and
the question.
CBS.
What would you cut first?
CBS.
Do you have a hierarchy of things?
CBS.
CBS All Access. That's
CBS All
cut.
Access goes immediately.
Wow.
Wow, but when that Picard show
that's
shows
right.
up.
Yeah, it'll probably, I'll buy it on iTunes.
So you have the discipline to subscribe for 3 months while new show's out and then cancel.
This is the beautiful thing about subscribing through iTunes instead of through a web interface, is if you subscribe through iTunes or Google Play, you just mash the button that says, don't renew this, and it works itself out. You don't have to talk to anybody, you have to call anybody or any bullshit like that.
And I shouldn't forget, because it's actually the most expensive one, YouTube TV.
Yeah, YouTube TV.
Because that's how I get my TV now. Since I cut the cable, that's how I get my TV.
Yeah. I have a hierarchy, and I think Amazon's on the bottom of the list, but I don't think I can cancel that.
You can't cancel Amazon because
Prime.
Of the Prime. Yeah, because there's going to be a moment where you're going to be like, shit, we only have three diapers
left.
Are
you saying that's the one that you kind of spend the least time watching?
Yeah. So like if we're paying for half a dozen of these services and Disney Plus comes along, we're probably just going to add it on. At some point, we're going to reach that point where you're paying whatever you're paying Comcast. So you got to rank them.
So
it's what you use the most.
So
what would you do if you could only have one? Netflix?
I think it would be YouTube TV.
YouTube TV. Well, I don't know if that even counts.
Yeah,
it does. It's another a la carte.
I suppose it does.
The thing that Amazon does really well is kid stuff. They have like Daniel Tiger and Sesame Street and a bunch of that stuff.
My kid's really into Pete the Cat at the moment.
Yeah, Pete the Cat's good.
Yeah.
I like Pete the Cat. Fancy Nancy, pretty good too.
Okay. And there's another one called Dot that she really likes.
I haven't watched that.
Dot.
Yeah, but Amazon Prime
Hilda on Netflix is the best.
Hilda is very... my daughter bounced on that, but I like
really?
It a lot. I think it's really
I
good.
Loved it.
Yeah.
So you alluded to this earlier, but you know everyone's very sad that Filmstruck's going away. There's a lot of petitions and a lot of support from filmmakers even who wanted to make sure that Filmstruck... I think they had, 100,000 subscribers, if that, but it wasn't sustainable from their perspective. But Criterion Channel, which was a partner to Filmstruck...
Yeah, because if you had Filmstruck, you also had access to the Criterion Collection.
Which used to be on Hulu, just to be clear.
It used to be on Hulu.
Yeah.
The Criterion Channel is going to launch their own streaming service in 2019, and this will be in partnership with Warner Media. So hopefully we'll have, if not all of, but much of, at least all the Criterion.
If they don't have the Rock and Armageddon,
I don't
want
anything. That will
be
successful if Filmstruck wasn't, because it's the same thing, isn't it?
I think that the Filmstruck was spending a lot of extra money on additional programming that they thought
it was one of the things I liked about Filmstruck is it's very curated. Like it was like, you know, look, filmmaker of the month. Like it's John Wayne week, so here's a bunch of John Wayne movies. Yeah. And they had a bunch of behind-the-scenes content.
Criterion did do that thing where even though they had the rights to this huge library of movies, they would window them. You would have a certain, you know, certain months, certain movies would be on on Filmstruck, and then certain months they would fade away. So you'd have to tune in regularly to get the thematic programming. And I think that's one of the ways that they're going to get around having to pay a lot of money for the licensing is doing these windows.
Which makes sense.
Which makes sense, and I'm happy to pay for it. If it's costs the same amount as Filmstruck, I'd subscribe to it.
I want Rian Johnson and Karina Longworth just to do a, like, hey, here's what you should watch this week. Just that's all I need, a channel. It's one movie a week, and it's just like, here's the thing you should watch. This is going to teach you about film history, and you're going to learn some new shit. Because the list of movies that, like, Rian Johnson had folks watch at Lucasfilm before Episode 8, I guess.
Yeah, I remember watching them.
Is astounding. And is in
I was introduced through that by my favorite one of that was 12 O'Clock High.
That's the Gregory Peck and the bomber, right?
About the World War II bombers.
Yeah,
and it's on Netflix and it's absolutely fantastic. One of the best war movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's like,
and I never, for some reason I'd never seen it, and I was blown away by it.
I know we don't count YouTube
Peck,
as part of the subscription service.
There's no one better.
Yeah.
But YouTube did have their own, you know, pay to watch stuff on YouTube, right?
Really?
The YouTube Red. Is what they called it.
What, really?
And now YouTube is starting to roll out some movies, ad-based movies, because a lot of people just want to watch movies on YouTube. YouTube is what they have on their phones.
You're in the ecosystem.
They're in the ecosystem.
You get some
they like
Logan
their account.
Paul.
They like to
great made for YouTube
subscribe
movie.
And like. And YouTube is starting to roll out. I think starting with The Terminator. You can watch full-length movies on YouTube with ad breaks.
Great.
On YouTube.com.
That's terrific.
Without any monthly cost.
It's just like TV, but now it's on the internet.
Yeah, they quietly rolled it out last month. But they're going to see if there'll be advertisers to sponsor films. So if like Johnson & Johnson wants to sponsor Look Who's Talking, you know,
okay.
It's like
right?
Back to the 50s.
Then they can sponsor for everyone who wants to stream that and get all Johnson & Johnson ads. You know, it's a smart way for them to make money. And I know a lot of people on YouTube don't want to do subscriptions, so they can just watch the ads.
I've subscribed to YouTube Red for a month about 2 years ago whenever they rolled it out. And now every time I log into YouTube, it basically is like, hey, man, you're watching an ad right now, but you didn't have to watch one. You could watch this. You pay us some money, and we'll give you 3 months free. You can try it. I think eventually they'll get to like a 24-month free trial if I just keep waiting to take the offer.
Yeah, Google needs – they have so much money.
Yeah, they can afford it. They need that cash.
Yeah. You know, a lot of these services bank on TV shows, like original programming as their hooks, right? Disney Plus, obviously.
Yeah.
And Netflix is the only one that's – investing in movies, trying to bring that 2.5 hour cinema experience to home to get you on a Friday night to watch Netflix as opposed to going to movie theaters. And I think they've not had a lot of success. You know, obviously they had a lot of things. It feels like the junk pile, the recycling pile for studios. Well, they couldn't put in theaters, so they put Cloverfield Paradox on Netflix. And they got a bunch of money to pay for the cost. Like, did you guys like Bright? That was supposed to be their big...
I didn't watch Bright because Will Smith, but... Mute was okay. I like Mute a lot. The Duncan Jones, like his fourth movie, I guess, after Warcraft. I mean, I thought it was charming and interesting and thought provoking.
None of these movies have been really critically acclaimed.
Well, they're on Netflix.
that's the problem, the association. Yeah. I think the first one, actually there are two movies
out
this
week. Why would that not translate to movies though? Because on television they do great. They won more Emmys than any other place.
I think it's a good question. I think the expectation. I think the type of storytelling you do in a 2.5 hour movie, like with Bright, you had triple A cast, great director, and for one reason or another, maybe that movie would have done well in theaters. But on Netflix, they held them to a different standard.
So I think Clover. So there's two examples that are bad that I'm going to give here. Annihilation is one. Everywhere but the United States. That was a Netflix release initially, mm-hmm. and then was maybe simultaneous theatrical. Here they did a theatrical release and then staggered it by 6 months before it hit Netflix.
Yep.
And that movie's fantastic.
Yep.
It's really good.
And that movie was really made. The director Alex Garland wanted that to be seen in theaters.
Yeah,
like there's a huge climactic.
I mean, it's a gorgeous film. Like, I have to imagine it would look better in theaters. I saw it on Netflix. Yeah. The other one is, I think Cloverfield Paradox is the kind of genre film that often doesn't get made anymore, right? Like, it's. I quite enjoyed it. I like the Cloverfield movies. I loved the one with the bunker and John Goodman and oh God, what's her name from Scott Pilgrim.
You're talking about 10 Cloverfield Lane?
Yeah, 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah,
Mary Elizabeth Winstead, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that this, like if you look at those Cloverfield movies, I mean, the first one was supposed to be a found footage movie, right? The second one was a found footage movie where J.J. Abrams went out and found a movie that was maybe could get jammed into the Cloverfield universe and then did. And this feels like the same. Yeah. Like I love that conceptually. It's such a fucking awesome, weird, high concept thing.
Yeah. I'm really bummed that Overlord isn't a Cloverfield movie.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, two movies
Cloverlord.
Yeah, there you go.
It's already there, yeah.
Yeah.
You're banging them out today, man.
I'm telling you.
These are free ideas. You should be dropping these on a podcast.
Going through a purple patch at the moment.
Email it to yourself real quick.
Two movies out this week on Netflix, I think, will maybe elevate the original movie programming to another level. One's Outlaw King. This is the Chris Pine Braveheart movie.
Yeah, I've heard interesting things about that. They had a longer cut. Did you read about this?
Yeah, they screened it at Tribeca.
They screened it at a film festival. It was not well received because it was considered to be too long and too much fat.
Is this Robert the Bruce? Is that the story?
Yeah, it's the Robert the Bruce, Chris Pine playing Robert the Bruce.
Okay. So this is, in if you only know the story through, not history books, but through Braveheart, this is the guy that betrayed William Wallace at the end and then turned, and he's the one who leads the rebellion at the end.
So I read an interesting piece about that. They had a much longer cut of it. Showed it at a film festival. It got a lukewarm response. The director said, let me go back in and fix it. And cut, I think, about 20, 30 minutes out of it. And that's the version that you'll now see on Netflix, which is the edited down, supposedly much better version.
Hmm. Yeah.
So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. The trailer looked good. I'll watch it. I like Chris Pine.
And that's a movie I would have seen in theaters, and I'm just glad it's part of the Netflix subscription.
I was going to say, is this a situation like All the President's Men and The Post, where they're like spiritual successors to each other?
Yes.
So you should watch Braveheart and then go watch William the Bruce?
I mean, historically, they are chronologically one after the other.
There was a scene in the earlier cut of Outlaw King where Robert the Bruce and William Wallace met. And that scene got cut from the final version that you'll see on Netflix.
Wow. They actually didn't paint their faces blue.
What?
So, in history. And you have seen Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
And that's the
right?
other movie. Yeah. That one, this is, I think, is the movie that can win Netflix maybe a movie award.
The
this
trailer
is the Coen
for
Brothers
it looks like is a banger.
So it is an anthology movie, which I don't think those typically do well in theater, especially original stories, anthology
like
films.
Four rooms, like eight people saw that in the theater.
Yeah, so this is six stories.
Two people per room. Yeah, exactly.
It's a Western. It's stylistically very different. Every story is different. I think they get better as you get to the end. A great cast from...
it's very much a Red Dead experience. You got to wait for the first Tom three
Waits.
Hours to get to the good part, huh?
And you know what? Playing Red Dead and then watching this movie, they go really great hand in hand.
Okay.
I won't spoil any of the stories, but I'll tell you the framing mechanism is that a book, they open a book, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, and just like in old-timey books, you would get color plates. Every so page, you get like a painting, right? And so they open up every story with a painting from the story with a caption at the bottom, but you'd have no idea what it means until you watch the story, and then that painting has extra meaning.
Big Fish kind of does that too, right? Or is it just the guy telling the story?
I think
Big Fish.
Telling the story.
Okay. I'll have to check that out. I love the Coens. I like Westerns. I'm in a Western mood frame of mind right now because of Red Dead.
Yeah.
And I like short stories, so it's perfectly tailored for me.
And they've been a lot of Westerns, right? They've been from True Grit, No Country is, I guess, a Western.
No Country's a Western, yeah.
And This
oh,
is
oh, oh brother, where art thou?
Oh brother,
kind of. It was set in the South, but it felt like a Western.
Exactly. This has a mixture of tonality of all of them. Tonally, it's like it's a little bit of the wacky, a little bit of the black humor, mm-hmm. a lot of the bleak. So if you are prepared to be hit hard with some of these.
Okay, we'll check it out.
One of the things I've enjoyed about Red Dead is noticing the references. Like obviously it opens with a Hateful Eight type situation. I haven't seen a Liberty Valance set up yet.
This is the kind of story where this isn't riffing on anything else. These are stories that will get riffed on. In future Red Dead type games.
Cohen's are A+.
Yeah. And then finally, Will, I know you've been playing Hitman. Tell us about that.
So I'm playing Hitman 2, which is the sequel to Hitman, I think 2016, maybe? I can't remember. It's came out a few years ago. It was an episodic game.
So it's called Hitman 2, but it's actually like the 15th Hitman game.
Yeah, so it's the second one in the current lineage. I think the last one petered out with Blood Money, which was maybe a 360 game.
Mm-hmm.
This one is a new engine. The Hitman 1 missions, they released episodically, and it was the first one they kind of treated as a live game. So in addition to rolling out a new episode every month or two, a new mission, they would also roll out contracts and escalations and things to do in between. So basically the difference here is that, in the old games, you could play them like any other stealth game where you like sneak around with a knife and jab people in the back of the skull and kill them and hide their bodies. But the secret of the Hitman games is always doing something ridiculous and absurd in this otherwise serious world. So you're this assassin guy. You can creep around. Unlike most other stealth games, like your Dishonoreds or your Thiefs or whatever, you can change clothes. So your stealth is not like creeping and crawling in the shadows. It's
just pretending to be someone else.
It's pretending to be a waiter to get in the position you need to do the thing.
Right.
So, for example, so Hitman 2 continues the story from Hitman 1, which is the least important part of the game. If you have Hitman 1 on the platform that you buy Hitman 2 on, you can play all of the old missions in the new engine.
Okay.
With all sorts of new mechanics that they added to kind of round out the first go round. Which is what I've been doing. I haven't even played. I played a little bit of one of the new missions so far, but there's mastery levels for each of the worlds. So in order to get the whole mastery level and unlock all the weapons and gadgets and the cool things that you want, like the noisemakers and the remote detonation bombs and the remote detonation rubber duckies and all that stuff, you have to kind of engage with the world in the way that it's designed to be engaged with. So instead of just sneaking around stabbing somebody in the back of the head, you have to figure out how to trigger the fire alarm and get the two people that you need to kill in the right place so you can drop a chandelier on them.
Okay.
Or get the two people to be standing in the right location so that you can sneak up on the balcony and push one of them over the edge and that person falls on the other person three stories down and kills both of them.
Okay.
So they've designed push a guy into a mulcher, right?
In place, costuming systems, AI systems,
and just
thought out all the myriad possibilities that you could kill someone as early in the mission as possible or as late in the mission as possible.
So it's not about speed often. It's
creativity.
It's much more like they build a clockwork world and there are triggers that cause events to happen. So in one of the game, this is a spoiler for Hitman 1, but in one of the missions you have to kill two people who are scientists working on a bioweapon and destroy the sample of the bioweapon, right? It's one of the best video game levels of all time, I think. And as you explore the world, you find out things about the characters. So you find out that the guy who's the mad scientist who's developing this bioweapon has real mommy issues. And like his mom recently died. She lived with him in the house. He doesn't like leaving the house because it's where he grew up and he has a great attachment to it. And you can put this sequence of events in place that makes him think his dead mother is still alive.
Wow.
And drives him over the edge so that then you can get him in a position to chuck him into a mulcher, right? And like
that's bleak.
Yeah, it is.
Is this in the new one or in the previous?
That's from the previous one.
Okay.
If you buy it and you don't have the old one, I would strongly recommend just paying the $15 or $20, whatever it is, to get all the new levels in the new game. You can do the mastery progressions, which unlocks, like I said, new weapons and new costumes and new starting locations and the levels and stuff like that. And as you get further along, you'll go from. If one of them is a fashion show and you start with as a guest at the fashion show, you'll eventually get to the point that you can like be a security guy on the top floor of the fashion show. So you already have access to a lot of the areas. And a lot of the game is figuring out how do I get into this area without trespassing or whatever. If you haven't played these before and you're curious about them, Giant Bomb did a thing for the Game of the Year the year that they the last shipment came out, which I think was 2016, called Hitsmas, H-I-T-S-M-A-S. And just watch a couple of those videos, and you'll see them. The magic of these games is figuring out how to do the absurd, not playing them like a traditional stealth game where you're sneaking around in the dark
and, the game
and stabbing somebody.
Having the foresight to let you do those things.
So the difference between this Hitman, this generation of Hitman and the previous ones is before you maybe figured that out, the game didn't kind of lead you to it to figure out how to do it. Now they have things called mission stories, which are like explicitly pop up UI elements that are like, hey, you just had a mission story. Do you want to see what this is? And you pop up a menu and it says, Bob has mommy issues. It's good for when you're starting, so you know what to listen for.
Got it.
But like Red Dead, you have to listen to the incidental dialogue, and you have to, like, you'll find out, oh, he has a lot of videotapes, old VHS tapes. He wanted them all destroyed, but I must have forgotten one. There was one up in the observatory or whatever.
It's a little bit of hand-holding for people who don't listen.
It's breadcrumbs to get people started and looking in the right direction. If you play it like a traditional stealth game, you're going to be bored.
All right.
Hitman 2.
Alrighty, that does it for pop culture. Let's move on to some tech news. I don't have any music intro.
I also want to. I want to give a quick shout out to Tetris Effect.
Oh yes,
God, that
game's
right. So good.
Yes. Now, it's divisive in my household.
What?
Because
the baby doesn't like it.
Yeah, baby's not looking at the screen right now. Danica is not a fan of Tetris at Burning Man, which is what she's calling it. She just wants straight up Tetris.
You can make the colors on the blocks the standard colors.
And it's also kind of expensive. It's $40 for a Tetris game.
It's a really good Tetris game.
Like, if you could buy Tetris on... Is Tetris not on old platforms?
You can get Puyo Puyo
it's
Tetris
on every platform.
Switch.
Yeah. You get Tetris on Switch, and you get the Tetris experience. Here, really, what you get more is that you get the music, and you get the design that lets you amp up the music as you play.
If your wife doesn't like games by Miz, I don't know if we can be friends anymore.
It's the Miz factor.
Yeah, if you don't like Rez, you're not going to like Tetris.
First of all, I don't understand people that say, well, it's still just Tetris. That's like saying it's still just Mozart.
Which is great, but I've bought Mozart a couple times before.
Look, the London Philharmonic does, the Vienna Philharmonic does the best one.
But it is, I would say, I've been playing Tetris games now for almost 30 years. I first experienced and purchased Tetris in 1989 when it came out on the Game Boy. Mm-hmm. Nintendo Game Boy, and I still have that cartridge and that Game Boy. The number of hours I put into that thing with the serial link play and everything. Mm-hmm. Oh my god!
Mm-hmm. At some point, that thing might as well have just been a Tetris machine.
All it ever was. That cartridge is practically fused into the Game Boy. Yeah. I never put another cartridge in it. It was just a Game Boy hand. It was just a Tetris handheld, and I've probably bought Tetris a dozen times since then. Tetris Splash on the Xbox 360, Tetris Ultimate on the Xbox One. Mm-hmm. Puyo Puyo Tetris on Nintendo Switch. I bought it many, many times over the years. I would say that Tetris Effect is the best version of it that I've played. That's even without a multiplayer component, which under normal circumstances would be considered unforgivable.
So right. I feel like it's the best one since they introduced the T-Spin. I still like the SNES version best, I think.
I think
T-Spin's bullshit.
Do you use, I don't know what the technical term is, but the saving the piece on the corner?
The hold?
The hold.
Yeah, you have to
the
do hold.
That. Okay.
Hold's vital.
If you want first introduced level. In the Nintendo 64 version, I believe.
Isn't the Nintendo version? Because it was in the recent Tetris Championships.
Yeah, but it wasn't in the...
So, hardcore Tetris players, there's a bit of a division about whether or not holding a piece is considered like pure Tetris.
When
that was first brought in...
Yeah.
Some high level Tetris players sneered at that as kind of like, too baby-ish.
So Tetris for babies. Yeah.
But it's been popular and it's stuck around ever since, the hold piece.
I love the Windows 95 or 98 version of Tetris. That's a pretty good one.
It's a game that's exclusive right now to PS4 and of course works with PSVR. Jeremy and I are going to talk a little bit more about it later.
It's pretty good in VR.
In VR. And it's one I wish was on like a device like the Oculus Go, on mobile VR. This is a game I want to play in bed.
I do have to try the
PSVR
version.
I don't have a gamepad.
You can have a gamepad.
I'd have to get a gamepad.
A Bluetooth. And the Bluetooth will
work. Yeah.
Even the Xbox Bluetooth
will
work.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully it's just a time exclusive and hopefully it will be on other platforms because it's a game that I wish I could just... It's a perfect 5-minute game.
It's unclear. 5-10-minute game. You're bad at Tetris. It's like 35, 40 for me.
Yeah, it's a little too much.
It
depends on the mode that you're playing. Last night I was playing the mode, score as many points as you can in 3 minutes.
Right.
Great mode.
Right.
It's unclear how much Sony paid for that. So it may be a forever exclusive. We'll see.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, Res Infinite never came out on Xbox.
That's true.
Came out on PC.
Yes, but that doesn't really count. Well, PC but I mean, stands apart.
Vive, yeah, well, that's true.
Quickly, tech news. Black Friday will include that. Cyber Monday. Are you guys looking to buy anything?
Nope.
I'm not in the market, but you never know what might pop up.
I just replaced washers, dryers,
There's nothing I'm looking for. It's not like I need a TV or anything. Is there any early word on deals?
Well, the deals have started so early now. Yeah. Black Friday starts in the beginning of November. And so really, the whole event on Friday, especially going to a store, who does that anymore?
Many people.
No, thank you.
It feels like it's
some people
increasingly on the phones. And I will be on my phone, you know, come Thursday night or Friday, you know, looking for things. But nothing, I'm not in the market for really
I'll keep an
things.
Eye out on my Twitter feed for whatever article pops up, like here are the 10 best, you know, Cyber Monday deals or whatever. But I'm not, like, I remember a few years ago, I wasn't in the market, there was a deal on some really good headphones.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, I could use some headphones. And they were super cheap. I love those headphones.
You know, noise-canceling headphones, I may be in the market for those because I got a tip that using noise-canceling headphones in the middle of the night really helps when changing a baby's diaper. You know the baby's already crying.
Oh, so you don't wake up.
Or you don't, it doesn't hit that point where
it just
really hurts
drive
your
you
ears.
Crazy.
Exactly.
Wario64 on Twitter is good for game and tech deals. If you don't follow him.
Black Friday or Cyber Monday, it's always a great time to buy last year's, you know, high-end products, last
yep.
year's TV. If you want to get an OLED TV, we still are big fans of the LG.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the B6 series or B7, C7. Yep. Those are fantastic. I don't think you need the 8 series ones. Or last year's laptop. Surface Pros are going really cheap. Surface Pro 6 is a great computer, not big updates this year. That's a big great laptop that I'd recommend getting
cool.
for Black Friday. Gary, did you talk about your Model X last time you were here?
I don't remember.
Been using it differently this week. Because
it came in handy this week because I paid extra for the premium package, which included something called Biohazard Defense Mode, which sounds like a ridiculous Elon Musk silly Easter egg type thing. It came as part of, it was the premium package includes like a better sound system, and I really mm-hmm. like to listen to music in the car.
Yeah, of course.
So I paid for a better sound system, but it also included this thing, Biohazard Defense Mode, which is essentially a filter, an air filter, that is supposed to be able to protect you in the event of a nuclear, well, maybe not nuclear, but a biological or a chemical weapons attack.
It's a HEPA 9N100 filter.
It's a very
right?
high-end filter. Yeah. And with the air quality being as poor as it has been lately, we've actually used it quite a bit as we've been driving around.
You just go sit in the
car.
You
press the button and it blasts the AC. And yeah, you're breathing very, very clean, fresh type air, which is, and anyone else, particularly in Northern California right now, will know just how bad the air. It basically it feels like you're living in the middle of a massive bonfire.
What happens when you open the door? Does it like crank it up really high to positive pressure you or anything? Or? Do you just get the bad air back in?
I think you just get the bad air back in.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
I mean, I've only opened the door, you know, that's when you get home and you exit the car or whatever. But it's been, you know, again, it's one of those features that I never thought I would have any. It seemed like, oh, yeah, how silly. They've thrown this in just for a lark.
Yeah, autopilot. Ha ha.
But it's actually, well, autopilot's good.
Anyway, we talked about this while you weren't here, but yeah.
If you don't have, it doesn't matter if you have a Tesla or not a Tesla, but if you're in California, you should drive with the recycled air setting on.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We always have that.
And don't take the outside air in. If you run max fan and recycled air, you will run the air through your filters, and that will be a significant difference in quality.
I mean, the interesting thing about the fires, California's Department of Air Quality posted a thing a couple of days ago that was like, hey, if you want to use up a mask to not breathe the bad air, it needs to be the kind with two straps and probably
a
ventilator.
Respirator.
It has to be an N95 or better. Yeah. The higher numbers are better. And it's if you're wearing the kind that looks like a surgical mask with the flaps around the cheeks, mm-hmm. you're not doing anything.
Yep, that doesn't actually filter anything. Will, you came in today with your Android phone and showed us night mode on your Android
night
phone.
Night Sight.
Tell night us about Night Sight and your experience with it.
It works really well.
This is Google's new camera app.
We talked about
it
a few weeks ago, it lets you, they finally released it for Pixel phones. It lets you, it uses machine learning to combine multiple exposures, information from multiple exposures to get what I would describe as a shockingly clear image in, what would you say? Practically no. Like, were you able to see my face when you took that picture?
With your eyes? Barely.
Yeah.
It's practically, I would say, very low light. Practically black. Not quite black.
Like, Gina and I took a picture of Gina on the front porch of the house earlier this week, and the only light that we were getting was like reflected from across the street off of a street light, and like a couple of like twinkly lights that somebody had on bushes.
It's certainly better than using a flash, which always gives you the worst. I don't think I've taken a flash photograph in years.
It sucks.
I don't know why they even bother including it on the phones anymore.
Because it's nice to have a flashlight.
That's the only reason you use it now. You certainly don't use it for flash photography because it sucks.
And I wish it's a flashlight that you can change the color temperature on, especially on those phones with two different color LEDs.
Yeah. Well, so this one, like I couldn't see her face at all, and I got a picture that was grainy, but usable.
Usable online.
Yeah.
You're not going to print it out, but it's better than nothing.
Like if it's like a birthday party, like if it's blowing out the candles of your kid's birthday, you might use it on. I mean, you
something like that
out.
Would be. I can see that being good. Yeah.
Hold still.
Yeah.
You might need to have your child hold still.
Well, and the interesting thing is if you put it on a tripod or rest it so that your hand's not moving, so it uses accelerometer and gyroscope data too. If your hand's not moving, it changes the exposure times dramatically. Yeah. And it seems like it uses one or two pictures to get the edges and then fills in color information over the multiple exposures and uses the machine learning to figure out how to combine them. It's really neat.
Yep. Everyone here have Alexa devices, Amazon devices?
Yeah, I have the corporate spy in my house.
If you have Skype, Microsoft is enabling Skype calls on your devices.
Just what I wanted, some more Skype in my life. Well, nothing better than Skype.
A lot of people use Skype.
Hey, you want to use Skype? You need to update it.
Yeah.
And probably you have to sign back in. And then it's never going to sign out or never turn off when you want it to turn off.
I fucking hate Skype.
Fuck Skype.
So many people use it. Let me know when it uses Zoom.
I want WhatsApp, man.
WhatsApp.
Get that next-gen propaganda channel.
Yeah. Apple sales, little rumors. VentureBeat is a story. Actually, Wall Street Journal and VentureBeat is a story that Apple is cutting orders on all their three new iPhones with the XR up to half of its production. Oof. Or no, 30% of the production cut from this because of a lower than expected sales.
They consider making the phones better.
Well, they did make them better.
Well, did they better make them than more even, better?
You mean as good as they had been charging them for?
Here's I bought a $1,000 phone last year and I didn't regret it at all. It was very good.
You know,
this one did not look better enough to spend another $1,000. So I'm happy keeping the $1,000 phone from last year.
You read these Apple apologist blogs. Let's say, yes, the phone is 30% more expensive last year, like when they started charging $1,000 over $600, but it's more than 30% better. Well, we had been expecting that year over year for the same price. That's why there are new phones every year.
Yeah.
Or don't release a new phone this year. You know, the iPhone 4 was 30% better than the iPhone 3G, and the 5 was over 30% better than the 4, but they kept it the same price. That's how new products are supposed to work. Right.
Well, and the point of the 10 was, hey, we're going to put some new technology in here that's more expensive and we can't scale as much as we want. But then they sold a billion of the iPhone 10s and they still kept the price high. Huh, that's an interesting model.
It turns out that price elasticity isn't a problem for them, that people are really willing to pay this much because the economy's doing well or because there's a lot of money out there. But that also has hurt the 10R, which in many ways is a lot like the 5C. And it's a better phone than what the 5C was because they didn't skip out on the processor. It has their best A12 processor.
It's just the OLED, right? Basically.
And it's just the one camera, but they have portrait mode with the one camera. And they have the LCD versus the OLED. You know, it's a different size, slightly different form factor, slightly bigger bezels, whatever. But it looks good. All the reviews said this is like probably the best iPhone bang for buck you're going to get. And yet, no one cares because they just want the most expensive thing. And Apple is kind of trapped in that market where a lot of the consumers just want the prestige of having the latest and greatest that Apple has to offer.
I mean, part of their magic for a long time was that, you know, you go to the car dealer, you go to BMW to buy a car, and they have the $30,000 car with one number on it, and then they have a $250,000 supercar. And if you look at the difference between those two, you can tell, oh, this is the bad one and this is the good one.
Mm-hmm.
With the iPhone, if you buy the 16 gig iPhone 10, I mean, I know they didn't make a 16 gig iPhone 10, but if you bought the 16 gig iPhone 5S, then you still had a phone that looked like the 16, that looked like the expensive ass 5S, not like they were visually identical. So you were getting the nice phone, whether you bought the $500 one or the $1,000 one.
Yep.
And now they've jacked that up.
And the 10R is the only one that you can get the good capacity without paying too much for it, the 128 gigs. That you don't have to pay.
It's $1,100 bucks for the 128 gig 10,
right? No. For the 10S.
Yeah, 10S.
10S. No, there's only 256. You go from 64 to 256.
Oh, right. That's right. They screw you and they get, they, okay. Yeah. That's unfortunate.
Yep. So, you know, it just shows that the thing that helped them last year in terms of people willing to pay $1,000 for a phone is also hurting them this year, because it turns out people don't want to pay less for something that seems inferior.
I mean, the other thing about this year, Gary, you actually bought one, right?
Well, I'm on the upgrade plan.
Okay. So,
so you get a new one every year. Yes, but, you know, you're
just paying the same $50 you were paying before.
Yeah, basically. So, and you send the old phone back to Apple.
Yeah. So I mean, the thing to me is that up until this point, there's been a compelling reason to upgrade more or less every year. Like, had I not been working at Tesla, I probably wouldn't have gotten a 6S, right? I would have kept the 6 Plus and been happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have gotten the 4S for sure, the Siri one, because who fucking cares about Siri? But at the same time, most of the rest of the upgrades, they've provided a compelling reason. Either the camera's been markedly better, the battery life is better, something changes and makes the phone better. And this one, it seems like it's kind of meh, or to worse in some cases. I mean, the battery life
was
bad.
It's been the worst S, perhaps the worst year-on-year upgrade they've done. I mean, again, if I were not on the upgrade plan, there's no way I would have done it.
So speed, 3G, or 3GS, right? Speed. Mm-hmm. Siri.
And the camera was way better on the 3S than the 3G.
So speed and camera, great. Great upgrade. Siri, I think, was questionable upgrade.
Yeah.
As an S.
Yeah. Battery life was better on that one, though.
The
5 to 5S.
Touch ID.
That was a great
one. I think that was
a
great upgrade. 6S for press, for taptic feedback.
3D touch, which was a waste of time.
That was a big. Yeah, I think 6S. That is the biggest waste of an upgrade.
The other thing that's interesting is having the Face ID phone, and then going back to this Pixel 2 with the fingerprint sensor.
Yeah.
When you're wearing a mask all the time, Face ID turns out is useless.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm typing my code in, and that delay between when Face ID tries to do its thing and then realizes it's going to fail, real bummer with the mask on. I mean, it's a problem for 3 weeks a year in like a small part of the country, but. It's an annoyance if you're wearing a scarf in the winter in Chicago, I'm sure.
Yeah. I think that does it for this week's episode. We've gone really long. And thank you guys both for coming in. Thanksgiving plans?
I'm making Thanksgiving. He's coming.
Nice.
His family's coming.
Come.
I'm sorry.
You have people who...
Yeah,
but we're
going to
do some kind of
masses.
Some kind of alternative plan, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll do something.
People want to see the baby.
You won't be left out.
Yeah. We're going to hang out at home.
We'll just put you up on Skype on the TV.
I'll be in Red Dead.
Yeah. I don't think that's true. I think if you're in Red Dead, you're going to have probably spousal problems. You should spend time with your family on Thanksgiving.
Spend time with my family. I know, with my family.
Yeah, you know, with Dutch and
exactly. Javier. All 20 of them.
Real family.
Mrs. Grindelbottom. Exactly. Whatever her name is.
Thank you both for joining this week. Hope you all out there have a great Thanksgiving. And we'll be back next week with another episode. I don't have any outro music. Maybe I'll just put something in the post editing. But until then, we'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.